Yes.
Okay. So let's go ahead and call the November 13th meeting of the Mill Creek City Council to order, and we will begin with the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mayor Pruitt?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Holtzclaw?
Here.
Councilmember Bond?
Here.
Councilmember Todd?
Here.
Councilmember Cavallari?
Here.
Councilmember Mead? Councilmember Steckler?
Here.
So Councilmember Mead notified us that he would be out at this meeting. He's on vacation, someplace warm. So may we have a motion to excuse?
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstentions? Passes unanimously. Next up is audience communication, items not on the agenda. And Will, you've signed up. Is that what you wanted? Okay.
Will Nelson, 14925 29th Drive Southeast, Mill Creek. I would echo the sentiments expressed by the last speaker last meeting against the proposed housing complex at eGov. I don't think that's a complex that we need here. Thank you.
Well, anybody else? Please. This isn't for the public hearing. This is just you talking about anything. Okay. Oh, we'll get to you. Anybody else? Going once, twice? Okay. We will move along to presentations. Bob?
Yes, Mayor. I'd like to invite Councilmember Ryan, who is here to provide a presentation to us this evening.
Good evening. Thanks for inviting me. I come bearing gifts. So a symbolic check to the city of Mill Creek for $12,500 from the Snohomish County Council. It's for a historic preservation panel project. And the genesis of this was that I heard that there was a project in the works in Mill Creek, or at least in design stages. And I called the interim city manager, Bob Stowe. I was actually at a conference in Nashville. And we were talking, and I could barely hear his voice because it was a very loud conference. And I said, hey, we have this these historic funds. Traditionally, they had been spent on county projects. And then it was Councilmember Sullivan said, you know, we should try and partner with the local communities and whatnot. So we opened it up this year. And so, like I said, I called Bob, and I said, do you have anything? I heard there's something. And he said, I think so. Let's look at it. And as methodical as he always is, he called me back, I think it was the next day, and said, yeah, we have this project. And I said, okay, can you get it done by the end of the year? It's pretty important. He said, yeah, I think we can. And we got it through the council, and as soon as he sent us the invoice, we're going to reimburse you for it. And I want to thank Bob for being very proactive and very responsive. And in addition to that, I don't want to let the cat out of the bag, but I have put something, another grant in the for a park project in the 2019 budget. Can't publicly announce it today. I don't want to jinx it. It's in the budget, we are scheduled to vote on the budget next Monday. So if that's the case, then probably your next council meeting, providing anybody tries to. I want to emphasize tries to pull it out of the budget. Anything absent that, then I'll be coming and giving you some good news here in a couple weeks. So I know I always say this when I'm here, but I'm very, my heart's always been with Mill Creek. And when I was in your shoes, I always felt like the county, frankly, treated Mill Creek like the little brother who did too well. And they never really invested in the area. And there's probably a lot of reasons for that, none of which I agree with. And so I told myself, if I'm ever in a position to help, I'm going to help. And I've helped Mill Creek quite a lot, and that's going to continue. We have a great community here, and we're going to keep it a nice community, and I hope that we can continue giving grants so you can do more good things, because I know a lot more people use your parks than just Mill Creek residents. So thank you for everything you do, and I'm really honored to be here. Help you out.
Thank you again.
Mayor, if you could have a picture with Councilmember Ryan.
Everybody.
That'd be great.
I'll step out of the way. Yeah. Doing two phones. Maybe lower the mayor's microphone.
Routing number and account number.
Now it's down.
Okay. It's pretty straight. Okay. Oh, it's cockeyed now.
Which way?
Drop. Oh. Hold. Took about five there. That's what you always practiced. All right. Thank you. We're good.
Thanks,
Gary.
You're welcome. All right. I'll bring it over to Mom.
Yeah.
Which one is it?
I can figure out what that is.
Good, thank you.
Yeah. Fold it six times and show it through a little slot machine.
Take your turn. Okay. Yeah.
And I'll let you know next week.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Okay. Next up is a public hearing, 2019 to 2020 preliminary proposed biennial budget and property taxes. Do you want me to open the?
Please, Mayor. Yes.
So the next, this is the next item on the agenda. This will be the public hearing on the budget and regular and emergency medical service tax levies. City manager will be presenting. I'd now like to open the hearing at 6:08.
Great. Thank you, Mayor, and good evening, Council. I have an abbreviated presentation for you this evening from when I initially presented the budget to you as an introduction last week. And I want to say again that the budget represents the most important and impactful policy decisions that a City Council make, and staff has worked tirelessly to develop a budget that reflects and carries out your guiding principles, with strong commitment to efficiency and effectiveness for local government services, operations, and capital investment. The document that you have before you, no doubt, as you have noticed, is far different than your budgets in the past. I believe it really represents a more robust financial planning tool or document, and which is the work of your dedicated staff. The schedule that we have for the budget, of course, last week I presented an introduction. Tonight is the second public hearing, as the mayor had mentioned, on the preliminary budget. It's the first public hearing on the regular and emergency medical services property tax levies. And then later on this evening, we're going to be having a study session on some predetermined topic matters. And tonight's study session is on public works and development services, executive department, legislative department, and capital funds, enterprise funds, special revenue fund, debt service funds, and proprietary funds, sort of a mouthful. On the 27th, we have our third and final public hearing on the preliminary budget and the adoption of the property tax levies. And later on, we'll be discussing that the budget includes a 0% property tax levy as requested by the council in your budget outcomes. And then on the 27th, we'll have a study session focusing on the police department budget review, communications and marketing, finance and administration, and then the non-department items. And that will complete the budget discussions for council. We're scheduled to come back on the 4th and have an overall budget discussion, and then hopefully have the council consider and then adopt the 2019-2020 budget. We do have December 11th as a possibility if we need some additional discussions in order to facilitate that adoption. So this is a revenue slide that shows the majority of your revenues is from property tax at 56%, and with sales tax being the next largest revenue source at 24%. These are the general fund expenses that are divided almost evenly between personnel and maintenance and operations. However, I would note that your fire services agreement with Fire District 7 are included within the maintenance and operation, and if you were to exclude those from this pie chart, you would find that personnel would represent about 70% of your expenses overall. These are your expenses by department, and probably not surprisingly, that 65% of the expenses are within public safety, with police 37% and fire 28%, and the next largest category would be public works at 7%. It's important, as we noted at the last meeting, to look beyond just the first 2 years of the 19-20 budget and determine your service levels and then forecast your general fund balance or the reserve. And so this slide looks at your general fund fund balance at the start of the biennium of 2019-2020, starts out at $5.7 million, and then as it arrives in 2023 and 2024, it gets reduced to just over $2 million. And this is without a property tax increase for any of the preceding 6 years. This is that same analysis or forecast with a 1% property tax over the course of the next 6 years. And you can see that you're still at a close to a $4.75 million reserve at the end of 2023. The property tax levy, these are for regular property tax increases. A 1% increase would add $62,000 per year. And then the compounding effect of that over a six-year period would be $1.3 million. And, of course, the benefit, I think, for any property tax increase is really for it gives you the ability to provide for an increased level of service back to Mill Creek residents. As a comparison, this does not include the 1% property tax that could be applicable also to the emergency medical services levy. And in that case, you would add about $17,000 more to this amount on an annual basis, or over the long term, that $1.3 million would grow to $1.7 million if you had a 1% on both the regular as well as the EMS. And that completes, Mayor, just a real brief presentation on the budget, and I'd ask that you'd open the public hearing or ask for a public comment on either the preliminary budget or the regular or EMS property tax levies.
So now let's go ahead and open up the public hearing for public comment. Nobody has signed up, so does anybody want to talk to the council about this tonight? Going once, twice? Okay, with that, we will close at this time the public comment portion of the public hearing, but you will have another opportunity on November 27th. So now it's to the council, or are you done with all your
presentations? Well, I'd only frame for the council that included in your agenda packet are the ordinances that would advance the property tax levies, and currently there are 0% planned for both of those levies in accordance with the council's budget outcomes. So 0% for the regular property tax levy and 0% for the EMS property tax levy.
And we also have any ordinance that we're banking, yes, we're not losing.
That's correct. And just as a footnote, on EMS, of course, the voters have approved a 50-cent EMS property tax levy. The equivalent rate, because every time that assessed valuation goes up, that effectual or that actual rate goes down. This year it's about 45 cents, and then we're projecting because of the AV increase that rate, effective rate, will be 41 cents per 1,000 of assessed valuation.
That's why when we talked, I said, although I feel very strongly about no general property tax increase, because this was voter approved, I would certainly like to consider
So, and just finally, we're scheduled to bring back both those ordinances for council approval next week. So, direction regarding if it continues at 0% or something different, council would be, or staff would be seeking that from council this evening.
Councilmember Cavallari.
Thanks, Mayor. Nice job, staff. I love that we got here without a tax increase. I wouldn't be for a tax increase at this time. I think it's appropriate to water issue and the infrastructure issue, that it's the appropriate time to give the citizens in this city a break. So good job belt tightening and
anybody else tonight? Okay, John?
Curious, Bob, why the decrease is pretty significant, the slide. to 2023 versus 2024 when we go from 5.3 down to 2. What causes that? Why is that such a significant decrease?
It's just the compounding effect of 1% property tax levy every year upon the projected assessed valuation.
So we have a balance of $5 million starting, right?
That's correct.
Without the 1% increase, that, you know, in the first couple years, you know, it drops slightly, but then when we extend it out 2 more years, it drops so dramatically. I was just kind of curious as to why the slide increases so much.
From the biennium from 2021 to 2023?
Exactly. What causes that?
I've got a couple of comments on that. If you look at what our fire payments are going forward, you'll recall that this year, or this upcoming biennium, we're going to have an 8% increase over the amount that we paid last biennium, which was $7.4 million. This year it's going to hover around $6 or $8 million, so that's a $600,000 increase. And then you take that out and you look at the biennium after that, we're going to increase that amount another $500,000 or to be at $8.5 million in fire service payments. And then if you look at those same fire service payments and what we're bringing in from EMS, so for instance, the 2019-2020 fire payment is almost $8 million. We're going to get from EMS, the EMS levy with a 0%, $3.4 million. The general fund is going to pick up $4.6 million to contribute towards those fire services because the EMS levy does not support paying for those on its own. So the general fund picks it up in this upcoming biennium to the tune of about 17% of the general fund revenues. And then if you look out to 21-22 and you base the EMS on those same $19-$20, because really a 1% is a rounding difference when we're talking millions of dollars, the fire payment in the biennium 21-22 is going to be almost $8.5 million. We have EMS revenue that we collect of $3.4 million. The general fund is going to pick up 19% of that remaining EMS payment, or almost $5.1 million. So it just keeps going up and up and up what the general fund has to support, because the EMS levy does not come close to supporting what the fire service costs us.
My question. Thank you.
I think this also indicates there's just a structural imbalance between our revenues and our expenses, where our expenses are going up at a much larger rate and increase than what our ability to raise revenue would be.
Before my comments, a question. Wasn't there a chart in here somewhere that shows the 10-year history of our property tax increases by year?
In the budget?
In the budget book. Wasn't there a summary of what the every biennium, what we raise property taxes?
I think it was since 2020, and that is on page...
Yeah, there's one page that has the last... I had it tabbed.
It goes back to 2015.
Yeah, was there not one that had it that goes back further?
No, but we can certainly supply that.
That would be helpful for me.
Yep, we didn't raise property taxes in like 4, 5, 6.
Yeah, no, I'm just trying to get. I remember that. I'm just trying to get the history of what it has been and what we did compared in the past. You know, I share Councilmember Cavalieri's comment that you guys did a great job putting together a budget with no tax increase. And I'm one who's, like many up here, if not most of us, is reluctant to raise taxes. With that said, there's some certainties, death taxes and a rising cost of our labor. And I look at this chart on page 24. I don't know who's going to be sitting up here in 23 and 24 when the budget comes up. Staring at that chart, I think it's, I don't want to get too out there, but it's almost irresponsible for us not to seriously consider a 1% increase to make sure that we don't have this big cliff coming up. I think we need to look not just in the short term, but in the long term. I mean, the reality is we have done a lot as a body and as a city. The staff is to be commended to cut costs, increase efficiencies. We have not increased the FTEs. I think actually we're down one from the prior biennium. So I think we have done a lot to, we can tell the citizens we have safeguarded their tax dollars, but I don't know that I'd advocate for more than 1%, but I think we really need to think hard about a 1% increase to make sure we stable that revenue so that we don't have problems going forward. So.
Okay. Council Member Bond.
So for the reasons that were fairly well explained by our finance director, I support the voter-approved EMS increase. It's not going to cover the cost of fire, but it helps us. And I agree with Councilmember Holzclaw that we should consider the 1%, and the reason might surprise you. I don't want to create a scenario where we can get roped into a utility tax. The 1% property tax, and Councilmember Todd is much better on this, but that hits the $500,000 homeowner for, is it $10 a year? A utility tax at 6%, which is the maximum allowed by law, on every utility that our citizens enjoy could be $10, $15, $20 a month. And I feel like that's sort of our ace in the hole. If something really bad happens or we encounter some crisis where we need to meet the needs of the community at a level we can't do it now, we can then have that discussion about a utility tax. But I don't want to save them $7 or $10 by not doing a 1% property tax and then create a scenario where in 5 years we really have to do it because we kind of messed up. Another thing, when I first came on, we did a few years of no 1%, and we were really proud of that, and it was good, and we felt like it was the right thing. And then when things went sideways, though, we had to do a 2.5 or a 2, and we did a couple a little bit bigger, whereas if we'd done the smaller, we would have not missed out on the compounding, and we wouldn't have had to hit with the year that it was a little bit bigger. So I'm struggling with that as I sit here and trying to say, what is the best thing for the citizens? There's a high expectation on services. I think we do a great job of meeting those needs. There is a cost to that. What's the balance? And so that's what's going on as I sit here, and I love what you brought us. You guys brought us a great package. It would not hurt me to approve it as it is, but I'm just thinking a little more long term, and the chart is a little concerning.
Councilmember Todd,
thank you. You sing that chorus very well, Mark, and I thought you were going to tell us about how, as long as you've been here, there's always the sky is falling chart. And that's the second chorus that you didn't sing this time. But it's true, because what happens is, and it's true for all cities, we are very conservative about our revenue projections, but we know darn well that our labor contracts are 2 or 3 years, and we know they're 2 or 2.5 or 3%, and they're going to be that the next time. And so it's easier to be more accurate on the expense side than it is on the revenue side, because we're conservative, and we're glad we're conservative. Now, as a young city, all the time that Mark was here, it was still a young city then, it's not so young anymore, but we had this money coming in over the transom because of development, one-time revenues, and we've been talking about that a lot recently, and that's why we're going to talk later on about how we got away with surface water fee fixed for many, many years, because we had enough money coming in over the transom from development and new infrastructure that didn't need work. And so our expenses were not as bad as we thought they might be, and revenue was, we had all kinds of money around. So we could pay cash for the building next door 10 years ago. We paid cash for a lot of stuff. That may happen for another year or two, but at some point, our 4.6 miles of square footage here is going to be full, and we're not going to have an opportunity. This past year, Arena Sports, redevelopment up there at Gateway Shopping Center, some more dollars came in that I don't think anybody would have predicted 2 or 3 years ago. So this chart would have looked the same a couple of years ago, and the reality is we did better this past biennium, the biennium we're now in now, again, because some of the one-time revenue. So I'm with you guys. That's scary. It's irresponsible, as Mayor Pro Tem Holzclaw says, to say we are happy with that top chart, and the variable here is is something going to come to our rescue again so we can push this out one more year? I don't think we can push it out very many more years, and the compounding does make a sense. Brian and I were looking for the chart. So, Peggy, it'd be great if we could go back to 2004 or 5 or something to just look at that sequence, because you're right. We went 0, 0, 0, 0, and then we had a 3 and a 2.5 and a 0 and a bunch of things. We should look at that and kind of get a sense of what we've done over the years as a council, not this particular body, but we as a city, how we've dealt with that. I'd love to see that too. Thanks.
Mayor Pro Tem Holtzclaw?
Just a few more questions so I understand it, because it's confusing. Our limit is raising taxes 1% every year, but that does not include our bank capacity, correct?
That's correct. 1% is the maximum amount you can do on an annual basis.
And is there a limit on how much the 1% plus the bank capacity can be imposed in any given year?
There's no limits. It's more political acceptability as to what you can impose.
Understood. I'd be interested in 2 weeks. Is it possible to take that top chart and put together a chart that showed if we were to adopt the budget without a 1% increase this biennium, what that chart would look like, what the tax increase would need to be to make the lines come out together? You following me? How much would we have to raise taxes in 21 and 22 so that we didn't have that plunge off the gap, so that the line of the decrease of the reserves doesn't go below?
So if we did nothing now and then in the upcoming biennium or the 23-24, we utilize our bank capacity,
yes,
that we would have, and what would the increase need to be to make the chart?
Yes. I mean, I don't remember which one of you made this comment, but I mean, to me, I'd rather consider a gradual 1% steady increase rather than on principle have nothing this year to say we did it, only to come back in 2 years and say, well, now we need to raise the property tax by 3 or 4% and dip into our bank capacity. I'd rather have that stable rather than jumping up and down. So I think it'd be helpful for the public and all of us, and I know it'd be helpful for me to see if we could create a chart to show what would the property tax increase have to be in 2 years to keep us from falling off the cliff, mm-hmm, one or two bienniums after that.
Mm-hmm. And just for a point of reference, our bank capacity is around $90,000 currently.
Okay.
If we were to bank the capacity from this year, that would probably put another $80,000 into that bank. So you'd be at 170.
Okay.
Just a point of clarity, Mayor Pro Tem, the property tax ordinance that you'll adopt next week is for a one-year period. So we could also show a scenario where it's 0% in 2019, but something different in 2020.
That'd be helpful. That'd be helpful too.
Okay. Anything else?
Yes. Thanks, Mayor.
The legislature was smart enough to incorporate the bank capacity process, so that when you need the money, it's there, you can go and get it. I don't like searching for justifications for tax increases on what might be a couple of years down the road when we have a 0% increased balanced budget in front of us. It's systematically unacceptable to me at this point. Just want to throw that out there. Thank you.
Mark?
Thank you, Mayor. Absolutely respect what you just said. Just as a point, though, there was 3 or 4 positions and some reductions in service to make this budget work. And so there's to balance it and make this work, we did see a reduction of where we would have been had we not made those cuts. So just...
We'll go ahead and close the public hearing at 6:30.
No, that's it, Mayor. Thank you.
Everybody gets one more shot next week. I'm sorry, the 27th. So next up is our surface water utility rate. Up.
actually, Mayor, Public Works Director is going to start off that discussion and then ask you to do the same in terms of opening the public hearing.
Do you want the public hearing open to include her?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, so the next item on the agenda is the public hearing on the surface water utility rates, and Director of Public Works and Community Development, Gina Hortolosa, will be presenting, and I would now like to open the public hearing at 6:31. Gina?
Good evening, Council. So this public hearing is a follow-up to last week's presentation that FCS Group offered to Council and the public. So again, going over some of the same concepts that we visited last week, the city's current surface water rate is $78 per year, which translates to $6.50 per month. This rate was established in 1999. Consideration of a surface water utility fee study was prompted by a surface water infrastructure assessment completed by Petite earlier this year, and also by a sinkhole that we experienced in the Sweetwater Ranch neighborhood, which ended up being an emergency project, so we had to handle it right away. So in September of this year, we entered into a contract with FCS Group, which is, they're here tonight, so John Ghilarducci and Melanie Hobart are here, to conduct a surface water utility rates study. At the November 6th council meeting, FCS Group shared with you what their analytical model revealed based on three alternatives, which are outlined in the agenda summary. So the first alternative is a baseline, essentially a status quo do nothing scenario where the surface water fee would not be increased. And this scenario shows that the city would run out of cash of operating funds by 2021. Currently we have a loan that was a $500,000 loan because of the Sweetwater Ranch project that had to be a funds transfer essentially from the general fund to the surface water utility. This equates to a debt of $172,000 per year. So also another important point to note is that if we were to just consider inflation since the current utility fee was established in 1999, our rate would need to be $10.08 per month just to stay up with inflation. That would equate to $120.96 per year. So that's a bit of a summary there of alternative one, which is the baseline, the do-nothing scenario. Alternative two is what we're calling the large pipe repairs, and this is in sync or in congruence with the CIP, the 2019-2024 adopted CIP. The CIP includes a surface water aging infrastructure program that addresses what we refer to as the F failures, which Petite recommended addressing within a year of their assessment, so that would be 2019. And it also includes the C failures through 2024. And this scenario, we also include two projects that were unfunded, which are related to surface water quality. And those two projects are the 164th Street East Basin and also the Lower Mill Creek Road Basin. The scenario also includes two additional projects that go beyond the life of the CIP, and that is because in Petite's assessment, they identified enough C failures for the large pipes for two additional years, again, beyond the CIP. So that would be 2025 and 2026. So the debt of this alternative varies depending on what the upfront increase in the fee would be. And so that is summarized for this alternative in your package on page 273, where it looks at the two scenarios, what we've referred to as scenario 2A and scenario 2B. 2A being a gradual increase and 2B being a higher upfront increase and lower debt. That scenario is also summarized in Table 2 of your package tonight. That's the preferred alternative. That's 2B. The third alternative that we presented last week is what we're calling all pipe repairs. And inherent in this alternative is an unknown, which is the actual condition of the small pipes. So we made some assumptions. And the assumptions are that the cost of the small pipe repair would mimic the cost of the large pipe repairs. That was an assumption that we had to make based on the information that we lack at this moment. And so we assume that that would be the cost, knowing that we have a lot more what we're calling smaller pipes than large pipes. The large pipes only represent 14% of our infrastructure. And again, like with alternative two, the debt service depends on the upfront fee. And that scenario, or alternative, I should say, is summarized in your package on page 275, which is part of the presentation that FCS gave last week. So staff recommendation is shown on table one of the agenda summary. So that's the preferred surface water service package. The service package is included with both alternatives, alternative 2A and alternative 2B. And it includes what I described in the CIP, both the funded projects and the unfunded projects of the CIP. It also covers the C projects that are not in the current CIP, so the 2025, 2026 C projects. It also includes item four there on table one, equipment replacement. So we currently have two sweepers, which are they were purchased in 2010, so they're coming very close to the end of their useful life. And at this very moment, they're requiring a lot of maintenance in order to be able to operate and sweep our roads. So that's a one-time use of $35,000 in 2019 and $35,000 in 2020 is included in this. That is conservative. Just for order of magnitude, each one of the sweepers that we have, which are the smaller type sweepers, are about $100,000 each. Item five in the service package includes an amount for fish blockage, which is currently an unknown to the city. But it includes an ongoing annual cost, a one-time use of $10,000 repairs beginning in 2021 through 2026, and that would kick off an assessment of identifying where those fish blockages are, because at this time we really don't know. And we don't know if they exist altogether, and if they do exist, where they are. Item six includes a surface water engineer, one FTE. So this is a position, and we'll talk about it later in the evening, that has not been filled, and it's a lack that we have currently in our staff. Previously, so in 2017 and before that, we had a surface water specialist, and Marcy Chu, who was with the city for about 15 years, and her focus was NPDES. So this position that we're proposing here is a variation of that. So this individual would focus on the NPDES, but also project management. So we're moving away a bit from that model of just single tasking to multitasking, and we'll talk a little bit more about that later in the evening. And then item seven is a GIS asset management. We talked a little bit about this last week. And even with the information that Pertit has provided just with the large pipes, it's a lot of data, and right now that data is not on a GIS system. If we proceed with the small pipes, that's going to exponentially increase the amount of data that the the city has on surface water, and it's going to be difficult. It's already difficult to manage the data that we have. So a question came up last week as to, this is one-third, what happens with the other two-thirds? The budget that we've discussed earlier tonight and we'll continue discussing in the evening does not include the two-thirds to make this GIS position whole. So at this time, what we're considering is having a consultant support so that we can get rolling on this GIS body of work that we need. So that is the service package. That is included, again, with both alternatives 2A and 2B. And as a frame of reference, in the Puget Sound area, the highest surface water utility rate is $259.32, and that's the city of Snoqualmie. That translates to a monthly of $21.61. The average range for annual surface water utility rates is between $156 and $192 per year, which translates to a monthly of $13 to $16 per month. So staff recommendation is for council to consider option 2B, and that's increasing the annual surface water utility fee from $78 to $192.72 beginning in 2019. So that's a monthly, that's increasing the monthly of $650 to $1606 and increase the fee by 3% over the following 7 years. This has a debt service to it. This fee includes one debt issue of $1.6 million in 2019, which represents annual payments of $135,000 over a 20-year loan life. And this recommendation is represented, or it's included in Table 2. That's Alternative 2B. And it does that table includes the comparison of the annual versus monthly, and then it also includes what the increases are with respect to the previous year. So certainly between the existing and the 2019, that's a significant increase. So this is the upfront increase proposal of 147%, and then after that is a 3% annual increase. Alternatively, the other option that staff would recommend is what we have called 2A, which is a less significant upfront increase. However, it has a higher amount of debt service. That debt service is summarized in Table 4 of your package tonight. After tonight's discussion and presentation here, the next steps were scheduled at this time to come back to Council the following week on the 27th with a proposed resolution. So at this time, if there's questions, Council Member Holzklum.
Two questions. Some of the slides reference existing debt service. That is the loan from our general fund to the surface water.
Plus we have a PWTF fund, too.
A what?
Public Works Trust fund loan.
Okay. I should have asked this last week, but between now and 2 weeks from now, the rate survey, I don't think that really accurately reflects the comparison, and this I'm going to carry Councilmember Bond's water here, because many of these jurisdictions have utility fees, utility taxes, that would increase that monthly charge. So I'd be interested in seeing this chart revised to reflect what the cost is with that utility tax on top of it, because I think that's the only way we can really compare apples to apples. Is that something that is doable?
Yes, and I'm seeing head nods here from FCS Group.
That'd be very helpful. I'm not sure how many of these jurisdictions have them. I suspect most of them do, or many of them do, but it'd be helpful for all of us to see that, because this just compares the base fee and doesn't take into account what would be tacked onto those bills by the utility tax and jurisdictions. Thanks.
And when you get that, a number of cities just
tax anything to have money to spend. So if the utility tax actually is used for the utility, that's one thing. If it's just a tax and it goes into the general fund for regular operations, that's different. So
It's really hard to tell, but... Okay, so then it has nothing to do with the surface water fee. Okay, thank you. Councilmember Cavallari.
Thank you, Mayor. One of the main reasons I was so, or I am so adamant about not increasing the property tax levy is simply because I knew this was coming. I think we all knew this is coming. The presentations by the consultants and yourself, Gina, have been fantastic. I support what you're doing here. What I really love about the way this is set up is that the it's very optic. You can see it. The funds are earmarked specifically for this use. I would just hope to see at some point, is there some sort of sunset clause we can put in there, or some sort of, as the pipes start to get replaced one by one, that we maybe ease back a little bit?
So the thought that comes to my mind is still our unknown of those small pipes. When thinking about what is the light at the end of the tunnel or a sunset as far as the aging infrastructure, to me that still represents, and to all of us really, a great unknown. We haven't, we don't have Petit on board. We are working with them on getting a scope fee schedule for that work. For the large pipes, it took them about 6 months to complete that assessment. So it is hard at this time, it is difficult to predict, you know, what is that light at the end of the tunnel without necessarily knowing what is the condition of our small pipes.
Okay, Councilmember
Speckler. Thank you, Mayor. So, Gina, I have to say a couple thoughts, my opinion on this, and just to clarify a couple things. Between 2A and 2B, 2A, obviously we're looking at bringing in debt that would help to soften the increase to the tune of roughly, I think it was like, assuming charts here, I missed them all, but like $6.8 million or something like that, or I think when it was finally done. And that did not include the small pipe repairs. And so that could add that, and that could take the debt up to $12 million or something like that. I mean, it's just a horrific amount. So when I look at the opportunities of the two, there is a reality of our pipes are in this kind of disarray. If we don't repair them, we're looking at more sinkholes and millions of dollars, so we don't have a choice. We have to start these repairs. And I do believe that incur that much debt for the purpose of trying to soften the blow to the citizens, you know, $30, $40 a year, is not doing a service to our city. So I support that we do take the hike to the 192 because I'm also taking into account that we don't have the small pipe repairs, which may mean we do have to go into debt. Plus, as Councilmember Cavallari brought up, you know, what happens down the road when we take care of these major faults that we found? Weren't there a whole bunch of sea level faults in there too that may by the next 10 years become major faults, which then we're going to be repairing those as well? So, you know, we might need that extra fund at that time because our sea levels became, I don't know what you call them, F levels.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they accentuate. So I do think, in my own opinion, I would support a major increase because it's a reality. The other reality to me, debt servicing, just to soften the blow, is doing a disservice. Come back to haunt us, should Murphy's Law come into play, and we do have significant repairs in the small pipes and additional repairs in the large pipe, we're looking at even more debt that could make this, I think, unwieldy.
Just trying to do the back of the napkin math on what a $114 a year increase in our stormwater fee would be in a property tax. Because as we just celebrated our 1%, you know, the idea that we may not raise property tax 1%, but we're passing on a fee. What is that, Mike? Is that 6?
That's a lot of percents.
11?
It's huge.
That's rough. You know, for folks, what I do like is what Councilmember Cavallari said is we're collecting it to fix a specific problem. It's not going into the general fund. It's not going to be, well, just trust us. We'll do something good with it. We've got a problem. We need this to fix it. That part I like. But these are big increases, and I don't like that. So I'm struggling.
Councilmember
trying to figure out how to frame this question. We tapped out in our surface water fund with Sweetwater Ranch. We had to borrow. Does 2B put us in a position of replenishing that and being able to deal with what we don't know is out there, the next Sweetwater Ranch? In other words, if we went with 2A to soften the blow, as Councilmember Steckler pointed out, we'd be taking on more debt, but then if we don't have the funds built up in the surface water fund, we're going to be borrowing from ourselves again and increasing the debt even further. Does 2B provide us more cushion for the unanticipated?
Yeah, John Ghilarducci.
In a word, is that on?
Yeah.
Yes, it does. What it would do is allow you, and there is some debt required even in 2B.
Right.
But because of that front-loaded increase, you have the buying power of additional rate revenue, and we set the level of funding for capital based on the cost of those large pipe repairs if there were an emergency. So not only are we meeting minimum fund balance requirements, if there were an emergency, you could use that revenue that was earmarked for the large pipe repairs and spend it on a different capital project. So you do have some cushion there and postpone the large pipe repairs in a crunch. So yes, you do have some cushion.
Money, we could borrow money at that time.
That's right.
Catastrophic failure, or we suddenly found a lot of the small pipes. So at that time, we can reevaluate our position and borrow money then.
That's right. Yes.
Thank you. So this is complicated. We're all struggling with how complicated it is, and is the part that's like, ugh.
The $114 is like, that's a huge increase. And so it's how we market that. But fundamentally, I was thinking about this, fundamentally we got some policy decisions to make, and the policy decisions we're making are that we have a continuing cost of current operations. Fundamentally, we've always been spending money on street sweepers and things like that. It suggested we build an operating reserve because we used it all up. It suggested we build a capital reserve because we didn't have enough. We are suggesting adding some headcount to properly handle our NPDES permit, and we're policy-wise, we're saying we may need to have some debt service coverage, fundamentally for paying ourselves back or whatever else. And so if we accept that that is, from a policy standpoint, if we agree with all those recommendations, that's kind of one box to check. And I agree with all those recommendations, so I'm there. I'm checking that. Okay, then the second thing is, Pertit has come back and given us some swag costs, the scientific wild ass guess costs, and I think we believe those too. There's F failures that we're going to handle in 2019, so we don't have sinkholes to deal with. There's C failures we're going to deal with between 20 and 26. We've got two water quality projects that we know of that we need to do, but we don't know anything yet about the 18-inch pipes, and so Gina said, or the less than 18-inch pipes, let's worry about that later. Or other water quality projects. So those are not in there. But so again, do we believe the swag numbers that Pertit gave us for the F, the C, and those two water quality projects? I think we do. I think they're close enough. So then we're stuck with, how do we fund this, both the ongoing operations and the capital program, and what's the most palatable way to do that? And underlying this whole thing, I guess there's an assumption still, and I suggest we go back and audit it at some point. We've 1999, when we started this, we had ESU is 3,000 square feet. Each house or townhouse is one ESU and 3,000 square feet in the commercial properties. I think it probably makes sense for us to go back and reaffirm that that's true as well, but we're assuming that. So it really comes down to, how do we want to collect the revenue? What's fair allocation to our ratepayers, and how do you do it, and what's palatable? And so if you do it gradual, we have to borrow more money and puts the cost out into the future. If we just jack the rate up as high as possible, or as high as recommended, I shouldn't say as high as possible, as high as recommended, we do that quicker. Fundamentally, there's kind of, if you think in your own life, are you the kind of person that saves money before you buy a new car, or are you the kind of person that says, I want a new car, and it's going to have a five-year life, so I'm willing to take a loan to pay for that five-year car life over 5 years? We talk about these as repair of our pipes, but the reality is we as a city own some pipes. They are now worn out. They've reached the end of their life, 30, 40 years. We're buying new pipes, and it's not unreasonable in one approach to say those pipes are going to have a 20-year life, and so financing those over 20 years is a reasonable way to save the people who are going to be using the pipes, which might be me if I'm here for 20 years or somebody else for the last part of that 20 years. Spreading that cost over the future, because that pipe has life from the moment we replace it, put a brand new pipe in there until we come to the end, that's one approach to go at it. So I'm struggling with the debt versus the big rate up in front. Personally, I'm not afraid of debt. Debt is not a bad thing necessarily. We all choose to use debt to buy to mortgage our houses. Some of us use debt to buy cars. Some of us use debt for college education. Some of us don't. So it's a personal philosophy. But I'm also looking at the palatability and the understanding of the citizen when they see their tax bill and how much they really pay attention to that tax bill. So I'm struggling with it too. Thanks.
Knowing that the need is there and it's legit, I wouldn't mind saying, hey, Mark Bond, this is the need. Are you willing to pay an extra $100? Yeah, I will. I would do it for me. I would say, this is a fee I will pay because I know I'm getting something. And I can go work an off-duty job or I can find a way to make the money because I still have these opportunities. I'm not on a fixed income. I'm a little concerned for that small, and most of the people that call Mill Creek home are blessed and probably could absorb this, and if they were given the knowledge of the problem and what our heart is and why we want to fix it, they would say, yeah, I see the wisdom in that. Let's take care of our infrastructure. I can handle the $100 a year, and glad you hadn't been doing it for the last 10 years. I wonder if there's a way for that small group of folks that this would hurt the most, that maybe have lived here a while, that home's, you know, they've been in that home for a while, seniors. Is there a way to exempt them, or if they were to apply for like a hardship or something, or is that just something that nobody does? That's the group I'm worried about, and that's a very small group. But
Don, have you seen that in other cities?
Yes, and the best way to, in my view, to approach that particular issue, and we do see this in a number of other cities, is for those folks who apply and are eligible, you can either discount or exempt their rates. Usually those rates are basically buyed down using an outside source of funding. So I'll say the word general fund. It doesn't have to be the general fund, but what that does is protect other rate payers from subsidizing those folks, and that's where you can get into some issues, because one of the things that the law does require is that rates be uniform by class of customer. So we have to be a little bit careful, but the law does provide for discounts for low-income and seniors, if you want to go there.
So unless you guys convince me otherwise, I'm on 2A, and I would love to have a conversation about folks that come in and say, this is a hardship, and this is why it's a hardship, and if there was a reasonable way to accommodate that. So that's kind of where I'm at the moment.
If we finance it in 2A, what is the cost, the total cost of the
project versus 2B? So we're going to be borrowing a whole lot more money.
What's the total cost of the repair versus 2B cost of the repair? And
so the total cost with interest, we can get you that number. I don't have it at my fingertips. There's a substantial difference just in the amount of principal, I mean the amount of debt being issued, but we'll get you the total payments.
One thing that I asked, talked to the city manager, I think FCS might be prepared, I thought, well, what happens if we, instead of going from 78 to 192, if we said, okay, let's double it to 150-ish, and then a year or two later you go to 175 and then to 200, you probably have to end up at a higher number, but have a little bit slower ramp to make it a little bit easier for Mark to find a second job to pay for my increase. Thanks, Mark. Instead of $1 million up front, you have to borrow $3 million up front or something, right? Right? What's the numbers?
We did run a couple of those scenarios. Melanie has those numbers. At 150, one of the things we showed you last week was a doubling of the rate at about that level. And if you keep it at 150, it works for a year, but the fund balance goes negative. At 175, it works. And that requires debt issue of about $3 million. Debt issues of about $3 million total. I'll let Melanie tell you.
So at 175, you can do, and you can hold that at 175, and it would be about $3.5 million of debt. So what you're doing is you're hitting that rate sooner, and you're covering more of your capital costs with cash instead of debt. So you buy down the amount of debt you need. You can go further. You can go to 200. That doesn't gain you anything in terms of immediate increases. But if you hold it at 200, then you're looking at even lower debt of about 1.1, 1.2.
So going from where we are at 78 to 150 to 175 the next year to 200 the next year gives you about the same debt.
Yeah, I mean, that would give you much lower debt. So what we've run here is if you go to 175 next year and you just hold it at 175, you're looking at about $3.5 million of total debt. Instead of that $6.6 million with the gradual increase.
Yeah.
We didn't, but
we could.
Yeah.
Actually, what I was talking to Bob about is we were looking for some slider where we can go and see what it is, like slide it over here and say, okay, you know, this is the debt, this is the payment. Well, but if you do it this way, it's that.
Yes, we could build that. It gets a little nerve-wracking to do that in a council meeting. But we could certainly put together a tool like that would allow you to do it, or we can try to listen to what you're asking for and bring it back. Either way, but we'd be happy to try it.
Okay.
Hey, John, also one...
Oh, I'm sorry, Councilmember Steckler's next.
I think rather than talk about the numbers, there's a philosophical issue that we've got to come to grips with here, and that is we have a choice of this increase is high because predominantly because we haven't increased it in all these years. That's why. Had we been doing this, somebody mentioned of the cost of living, just inflation, you know, it would not be that big of an increase. But we didn't have the crystal ball. So now if we want to get to right, it's going to be a big increase, and that would allow us to make the repairs we need to make. The philosophical question is, do we want to incur additional debt to soften this blow? And Councilmember Todd used the car example, buying a car. If I'm going to buy a $40,000 car, and I got the money in the bank, and the question is, do I want to spend the money on the bank and buy the $40,000 car, or do I want to finance it? And maybe that car might wind up costing me $50,000 or $60,000 because I financed it. But maybe that's what I want to do. And that's for some reason I don't want to spend that money. I want to leave it there. I want to use some of the use for it. Our question is, do we want to hit the taxpayers with a large increase, or do we want to hit them with a lower increase, which in turn will cost them more money? And that's the problem of debt. It will cost them more, but will soften the blow. Councilmember Bond brings up low income, fixed income. People over 65, there are laws that can protect them. They can challenge those and ask for a reduction, and that is possible, and it's not misleading or, I think, abusing power by any means. But I think before we get to any numbers, or we need to decide philosophically, are we willing to absorb what would be the normal rate to the taxpayers, or do we want to look at a debt to soften that, but it's going to wind up costing them a lot more? And, you know, that's why I have a problem. I don't think we need to soften that yet, because I think we've got a black cloud down the road where we might need to bring up that debt at that point. I would hate to waste that now and then find those small pipes or other pipes, and we've already incurred the debt, and now we're going to incur more debt, which could be a huge amount of cost. So we've got the money. It's just not going to be popular. It's going to be very, very unpopular, very unpopular to be the city council that raised this fee. But it's a reality. I'm really concerned at incurring the debt that's going to wind up costing us so much more and could hurt us down the road.
following Council Member Steckhorst's direction, only because I would rather rip the Band-Aid off and take the pain now and make it gradual over time. I think that's going to be more palatable, as painful as it will be initially, to see that fee increase. With that said, I think what would be helpful is maybe not a tool where we slide it, but is a 2C that is somewhere in between 2A and 2B. Say, I don't know if we pick a flat $100 increase or if we make it $150 and just to see what, to give us a midpoint so we could kind of compare the three scenarios together. The last thing I'll say is I understand and sympathize and agree with trying to soften the blow to our taxpayers. At the same time, I'm afraid of the unexpected. And I'm more afraid that we do something in the short term to say we held the line on taxes, only to find that either some or all of us or seven entirely different people 5 years from now are going to be faced with bigger decisions and bigger increases to make because we didn't set the table well enough to make us prepared for dealing with the unexpected. And that's what I'm challenged with in looking at this.
If I remember your presentation correctly, one of the safeguards with the debt was that you had a three-year window to spend that money, otherwise it went back to paying off the existing debt?
The three-year window is for arbitrage rules. Yeah, you have 3 years to spend it, or there are tax ramifications.
That's why you can always go borrow 20 and put in the bank, right, and then split it over the next 20 years. That doesn't work.
Thank you. That's why we spaced it out.
John and Melanie, really quickly, because I know you ran the scenario in preparation for tonight's meeting, the 150, which would be the equivalent of the 2C option that we're talking about, is that the information that you have here, $150 per year, $12.50 monthly? So you have some of those numbers already.
Well, we ran the 150, but we held it constant at 150 after that. And that scenario doesn't work. But what I understood you to ask was starting at 150 and then ramping up from there.
Yeah.
Okay. And we could run that as a 2C. Is that a fair characterization of 2C? Okay.
Yes.
Councilmember Todd.
Thanks. So, if I then I'm going to put money at 5%. On that car over the years, but it depends on what it's worth to me. And so they've used a that is 4.5%-ish, basically, because of the choices. We pay for, she left the room, but we can buy one penny a month. The value of that, and it's really sad. Would we, like Councilmember Steckler, pay for the next 20 years worth of? Is he willing to do it, or is he willing to want to pay it over 20 years? And if he just adds up his tax bills over 20 years, that will add up to more than $1 million we asked him for up front. But that's because there's a time value of money in there. He got the opportunity to use that money in the meantime. So people don't always think like that, but that's kind of really what's going on. At some point, there's a, what do you think you can do? And if you're fixed income, I'm looking at my bank account where I'm getting a 1% if I'm lucky, or a 2% CD if I'm really lucky. I'm feeling like, don't be borrowing money at 4. But other people would say, geez, I'd rather have the money and I'll put it in the stock market and make 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, and thank you very much, I'll pay you when I get it. Thanks.
Shall we take public comment now? Okay, so Will, you were first up, and then Deidre. Sign up sheet.
Once again, Will Nelson, 14925 29th Drive Southeast. In my case, as I said before, any rate increase will come out of some merchant's pocket, not my pocket. So there's a net. It's not a, whatever it is. been doing that for 15 years and will continue to do that until I can't do it anymore. I've never been much of a debt person. As Mike said, maybe for a house, maybe for a car to get to work. Otherwise, I've done cash all my life, including sending my daughter to college, for which she became very liberal, which I wonder about. I do wonder about all these people I see go by my house every morning, all these little ones. These little ones cost a lot of money. Shoes every 3 months, new set of clothes every 3 months because they grow like weeds. I worry about those people. And so, you know, as Mike says, it's quite a conundrum. And initially I was for the 2B option, and as I thought about it more and more, the 2A sounded better. But if I were to revert, I'd probably go the cash option. And as Mr. Steckler has pointed out, and take the pain now, and rather than later. I would also suggest that so this thing doesn't get carried away in the future by your staff with great needs that they envision and see and might be nice to have or not have, I would suggest you sunset this thing for some time in the future at some base cost plus bonding costs so that some future council has to revisit it and own the thing again so that this doesn't get away from us. Thank you.
David Voss, 15226 12th Drive, Southeast Mill Creek. I'm here to talk a little bit more about surface water and a question that Council Member Huskar asked the Director of Public Works last week. I failed to take advantage of the opportunity to respond to that question, so I'm here to now respond. But before I do that, I as a private citizen, am in favor of raising the rates. I think we've been getting away too long with the rates as they've been. I kind of look at 150 as a good target value with a steady increase after that. Let's not put the debt off on our kids. We're here to take care. We wouldn't move in when it was in good condition. Let's leave this place when it's in good condition. So that's the way I look at it. Pick up your trash before we leave. Okay, now for the question that Councilman Holtzclaw asked. He said he lives in a subdivision that has a detention basin, and all the water from his homes go into that detention basin, and then it's metered out from there. And the question was, are the detention basins in MCCA any different than that? The answer to that, if I have it right, was no. They're no different. And I take exception to that. You may realize that MCCA is about a third of the size of Mill Creek. We're about a little over 1,000 acres. Mill Creek's worth about 3,000 acres, something in that order. We not only take in all that water from our homes into our detention ponds, we take in an additional 1,000 acres from subdivisions outside of our MCCA area. And I would assume that the city is relying on us to maintain it in good order. So I would hope that because the city is relying on our detention ponds to take care of a lot of the water that's in Mill Creek, that they would be willing to share in this, to take care of it. Now, the city hopefully hires a surface water engineer. I think it's about time. Has somebody good. We don't have somebody on staff in MCCA that has that expertise. I'm probably the closest to it, but I'm a pavement engineer. I kind of get involved in this because it has numbers involved. But it would be nice to have an expert that his job, her job, is to maintain surface water in the city. And because you have a utility, you have standing in the county. And when you go to these quarterly meetings with the county, you say, hey, county, you're dumping too much on us. Let's get this solved. Let's do it in an economical way. MCCA does not have that position. We have no standing in the county, and I sometimes feel like we have no standing in the city. But that's another issue. So I don't know how much was it. What did I say? 6 years ago, I believe, mayor said to the city manager, why don't we have a study group? And this is where to really study the numbers to see what's viable. MCCA has to come up with a little seed money to make it work. Councilman Holtzclaw subdivision has to come up with a little seed money to make it work, and other ones seed money to make it work. I'm all for talking that out, and I think it would be a good thing to do. So at the time the study was done by R.W. Beck, I said 17% of the budget at that time. I doubt whether it would be more than 17% of whatever that number is, $150 a home or whatever the rate is, but I think it's certainly worthwhile looking at. And while we're making these adjustments, this is a good time to do it. Have the city manage all the detention facilities in the city, bring them up to speed. You're in charge. Let's get it done. We're here to pay for that. Thank you.
Anybody else want to address the council on the surface water fees? Going once, twice? Okay, we'll close the public comment portion of the hearing, and you still have another chance. So with that, does the council have any more comments tonight? Okay, so I'll now close the public hearing at 7:17. On to old business, executive search. Bob.
Thank you, Mayor. At the last meeting, the council had established a council committee to further investigate and evaluate the proposals that the city has received for the executive search firms. As part of that due diligence, the committee and I are still waiting on several references to come back for some of the search firms, so we would request that this item, or I would request, Mayor, that this item be postponed until your next meeting to give an opportunity for those references to be presented to the committee and then a recommendation provided to the council at that time.
Thank you very much. Now we're up to new business, successor in a local agreement with the City of Edmonds for the purpose of receiving domestic violence coordinator services.
Thank you, Mayor. This is an interlocal agreement that the City of Mill Creek has entered into with Edmonds since 2007. It's an interlocal agreement that is currently set to expire at the end of this year. Edmonds is willing to enter into another agreement with us with the caveat that their workload is becoming such that they'll likely issue a termination of the agreement to the city sometime during that term. However, they would not issue that termination until Mill Creek has found another provider. So the recommendation still is to enter into the agreement to allow us to continue utilizing the services for domestic violence coordinator services from the City of Edmonds until such time as we're able to find a new provider and Edmonds is no longer able to provide service to the City of Mill Creek. So I'd be glad to address any questions that council might have about the interlocal agreement at this time. They do have the option to terminate, and they've indicated to us that likely that's going to be the case during the term of the agreement, again, due to workloads that they're experiencing.
But sometime in 2019?
I don't know the exact year, but it could be 2019. Maybe it goes into 2020, but we expect during the term of the agreement that they will issue a termination notice. And we are, yes.
We are, yes.
We're actively looking for another service provider to provide that to us so that we are ready when a termination is issued by the city.
Find somebody that's as good. So what you're looking for is a motion to authorize the city manager to execute the successor in a local agreement between the City of Mill Creek and the City of Edmonds for domestic violence coordinator services. Do we have a motion?
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion?
I was going to say it's been great, and I think the terms of this contract are the same great terms we've had. This is great. We've been able to borrow part of this person from Edmund for all these years, and as the mayor points out, we've had good success. Those of people who have been closer to it have always said this has been a great person. I'm sure the city is going to look lots at other places, you know, other cities, but does the county even have this kind of service? Is that something we could contract with them?
We are going to be looking at other agencies, but there are also private entities or private firms that offer similar service as well.
Okay, so you don't have to figure out who's got the 90% to go with our 10%
right.
necessarily. Oh, that's great. Thank you.
Might be off.
Second. Any further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstentions? Passes unanimously.
Can I just throw out a comment? So I've had some interactions with Monroe and their advocate, and I was very impressed with the level of service they provide folks. So
okay.
I don't know if they're worth just maybe reaching out to. But
we'll follow up. Out there. Thank you, Councilmember Bunn. And Mayor, for the next item, I'd invite the council to sit at the study session table. So if you wanted to take a break for 5 minutes, allow us time to sit shoulder to shoulder, and we'll review the budget.
Okay. Does everybody want to move down there? Okay.
Oh, you can just come up here.
During that time?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
But I don't have to sit up there now? Or do I?
Well, we don't have you on the schedule for the budget stuff.
Correct. I'm going to hide back here. I have that option.
No, we don't have any PowerPoint presentation.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I know. I called Joni about something today, and she said, I'd be glad to help you with that, John. Right after the budget's done. I said, I want to get back to you in a couple months.
You can always use a little rearranging. Trust me. Let's hope I have them in the right order for these folks.
Oh, Pam's going to be here.
She was
is she right there? Okay. I'm not sure. Can you do that?
It's wrong.
We just don't need too many chairs here.
This
calculator
on fancy calculator.
This only has eight. Wow. It only has eight digits.
You can get three in a box of cereal.
How much money we could spend.
Oh, that's it.
Kind of looks like a solar power.
Nope. This is all, I don't know. There's a dollar at
put
the dollar.
Put your name store. On the back. So you
yeah, start. Good. That's good. Yeah.
Well, I've had a few of these over the years.
You don't worry about finding that thing.
No, no. If they're any better than this, they disappear.
Oh.
Because I leave it out there on the counter. And it disappears. This one's been here a long time.
Oh, I thought maybe Santa needed to put something in your stocking.
No, no.
Replace
no.
that.
No, no.
Lime green.
They are amazing how long they last, aren't they, though?
I got one that's probably 20 years old, still yeah. works.
I got a slide rule still good, too.
Yeah, they kind of find a way to, you know, Apple sort of taught them how to make calculators die.
Mm. Okay, so let's go ahead and get, everybody's here? Yeah, so yeah. let's go ahead and get started. Right. Bob?
Well, this is an opportunity for you to become as familiar as you want in regards to the various departments of the city, and so we're going to be focusing on two departments plus the legislative areas for expenses, and then capital funds, enterprise funds, and sort of the remaining funds within that area. Our plan is to really present to you, Gina's going to go first on the Public Works Department, just present at a 35,000 foot level, brief presentations, because we really want to make effective use of this time and allow you to kind of steer the conversation of what you're interested in terms of the department expenses. So we're going to start off with Gina, and then I'll follow, and then we'll pick up with the legislative department at the end.
Okay, thank you, Bob. So I organize, I'll have four topics to talk about, share with you about my department. I'll start off with people, so staff. Then I'll go into equipment, then projects, and then continuous improvement. So starting off with people. Staff, in your budget books, Appendix E is the section that addresses the changes in staff from the 2017-18 budget to current and then to the proposed budget. So I must say that it took several conversations with fellow directors to really understand what was going on in 2017 and 18. Part of it is I wasn't here, so I lacked that knowledge. And part of it is there was a lot of change. So for starters, the department was restructured. So what is now the Public Works and Development Services Department used to be Public Works, Community Development, and then Recreation. So these were all in one, they were all combined in the 16 FTEs that you see here in Appendix C. That's one part. The other part is a lot of the individuals, so out of those 16 FTEs, there were changes in duties, and physically eight are gone for various reasons, but they're not here. So I actually never got to meet them. So it took several conversations for me to get some context as to, okay, where did this number 16 from the 17-18 budget come from? So just wanted to provide that context. There's been a lot of change since over the past couple of years and restructuring of the department. And also, the other thing that has happened in looking at the staffing and staffing changes is that, and I'll talk a little bit about that under the continuous improvement, is that we have individuals that are wearing multiple hats, which is not a bad thing. It's just that that's a reality. And perhaps in the 17-18 budget or even before that, there was more of this single body of work where one person used to do one thing. Now that is not the case in the department, that's for sure. So, at any rate, Appendix E addresses the staffing, the people, and in the 17 and 18 budget, there were 16 FTEs that were budgeted. Those were budgeted. There are three individuals that were not budgeted that, when I arrived in 17, were here or had left shortly before I came. So that was another interesting fact. Currently, there's 14 staff members in my department, and what we're proposing with this budget is to increase it by one to 15 FTEs, and that one full-time employee would be the project engineer, and the project engineer is budgeted through the CIP. So that's a little bit on the people side. I will add that this project engineer is separate from the one FTE that we talked about during the surface water discussion. That surface water full-time employee would come into the picture in 2020. This project engineer would come into the picture in 2019. So we're talking about two different positions.
Is the project engineer replacing Kamal?
So Kamal's title was supervising engineer, and Kamal resigned. Mm-hmm. So we're in the process of hiring a new supervising engineer that can provide that, again, that breadth, that wearing multiple hats. So the project engineer is a separate position.
So there's general fund. The past was public works, community development. Recreation was an enterprise fund, and surface water was an enterprise fund. Mm-hmm. We've collapsed the recreation fund into general fund, but the surface water is still a separate fund. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just trying to keep track of that. Is this a 16, all of those folks, no matter which fund they went to, or is there, or do we also have a pool of folks in the surface water part of the budget that's a separate fund?
So those 16 individuals that are identified in Appendix E, that includes what at that time, so 16 comes from the 17-18 budget.
Yeah, right.
That includes community development. It includes building inspectors. It included a city engineer, admin staff. It included five maintenance workers and one maintenance supervisor, a director, and then what was budgeted as a surface water manager. That's how it was budgeted at that time.
So 16 personnel, or if you look at the total budget, then they're just allocated differently across the different funds that you have.
Yeah, a lot of these guys, like you said, wear multiple people, wear mm-hmm. multiple hats, and so part of somebody's time is charged to surface water, mm-hmm. part
right.
of it's charged to something public.
Right, streets or something
right.
else.
Right, and it's a good point that I think pause and note also, since the budget was developed, we've made a decision to allocate the supervising engineer position differently than it has been allocated in the past. In the past, it has been devoted, majority of their time has been allocated to surface water. We're reducing that and allocating more of it to splitting it between CIP and general fund, and so surface water is now paying a lower percentage of that person's salary. Okay. Previously it was, I think, 80 or 85%. That now has been reduced down to 40%. So that will free up a little bit of revenue in the surface water. Not a lot, but it'll free up a little bit of revenue, but we just feel that that's more appropriately where the person will be spending their time
yeah.
rather than allocating the salary to something that doesn't reconcile at the end of the year.
Yeah, so that's good. Is that figured into what FCS figured in terms of ongoing operating costs going forward, or was that kind of using the old?
That was the old one, so we've told them about that, and so hopefully they'll be calculating that. I don't know if it'll be a significant, but it'll be some there'll be some fee reduction as a result of that.
Yeah, it's like 0.2 FTE somehow or something came out of there.
So they didn't have the time to do that for tonight's presentation, but we'll be refining.
2 weeks from now,
yes.
So instead of 192, it could be 192, 191 and a half or something.
Not
material.
Yeah, not much.
So granular.
Okay, thanks.
All right, so that's on the people front. Then one of the significant changes in the 1920 budget is equipment. So we have aging equipment as well as aging infrastructure. And one of our oldest pieces of equipment is our bucket truck. So I'm sure some of you have seen it. This bucket truck is a 1998 model, and when the city bought it, used. We've had significant issues. It actually just came back from the shop. It has hydraulic issues and, quite frankly, some safety issues. Recently, it was fixed for its hydraulics, but 3 weeks ago, it was in the shop again because we're working on some lights, and the truck just died. Luckily, I did not have a person on the bucket on the top, so it died while he was driving it. But it created a whole bunch of logistics issues where we had a truck that was stuck in the middle of the road. Somebody had to come, help the crew member get back to campus, figure out how to bring the bucket truck, etc. So I share that because that is a reality of our day-to-day operations with an old piece of equipment. So with this budget, we're proposing to fund a bucket truck. A bucket truck costs about $150,000. And $120,000 would come from the city street fund and $30,000 from the equipment replacement fund. So that's the highlight on the budget as far as equipment.
Are there lease options with that, Gina?
There are lease options, and we can rent them.
However, we have city streets, and often we have to fix the lights. So logistically, renting and returning,
I don't think renting's an option. I mean like leasing a vehicle. That's where you're going to get a replacement every few years.
Yeah, we didn't like look at that in depth. I didn't, at least.
No, I'd certainly like to see the numbers. I thought leasing options are
That, again, it's a cost of money. That's all it is. Mm-hmm. And with the lease, you're paying some leasing company to make a profit on their middleman. So it typically actually costs more.
Yeah. Just in comparison, I've been with jurisdictions who have leased all of their pool cars, and it's usually more expensive than purchasing your car. The advantage is you have a newer asset every 3 or 4 years versus an older asset which you have to maintain.
Leasing makes sense for a private sector where there's some tax advantages. You can play some games, mm-hmm. not games, but there's some advantage to that. Where we don't
operating have operating versus capital lease.
Where we don't have taxes, the lease thing no longer is a slam dunk money.
Why isn't this coming out of the equipment replacement fund?
It's not coming out of the equipment replacement fund because you only had $30,000 that was depreciated. I don't know what the original cost of this asset was, but when we went through and looked at the numbers and basically had to recreate a lot of the information, there's $30,000 that's tucked away in the equipment replacement fund. So the way that works is the capital outlay has to go in the fund. In this case, it's the city street fund, pay for the initial outlay, which would be reduced. Let's just say it's $150,000. 30 will come out of equipment replacement, 120 out of the capital, and then what we would do is every year, on a ratable basis, we would depreciate the amount to replace it at the end of its useful life.
My recollection is we rented bucket trucks when we need them. It wasn't very often, unless when found a good deal on a used bucket truck, and it was less than $30,000.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was a cheap way to go at it, but they decided at the time it was handy to have a truck because we had more and more things we needed to do, and going random was kind of a hassle. And so, as much as it's a pain that the thing dies now, it was a smart thing for less in the past to do that because it saved us some money and saved us some money.
But we only paid $30,000 for it, which
it was less than that.
Which is why that's all the depreciation is.
That's right.
Okay.
So, as a side note, I will look into the lease, Councilmember Cavallari, because it's something I haven't done, and just as a sanity check, I think it will be good to compare.
Absolutely. Thank you.
And we'll check, and like, I know the state has rosters, and maybe we can tag on with somebody.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Okay, the other topic I wanted to present regarding my department is projects, lots of projects. This is almost a repeat from the CIP. But this CIP, unlike the previous CIP, has a programmatic approach. So there's a lot of this assessment, prioritization, then deliver. And you see it again and again with the PPRP, the Payment Preservation and Rehabilitation. You see it with the sidewalk. We talked about it with the surface water, the bridge program as well. So it's a little bit of a different approach. And again, it's important for us to be able to defend our projects to the public. Why are we prioritizing one sidewalk or over another? You know, why one pipe over another or a street over another as far as payment preservation? So that's a programmatic approach that is, you see it again across the CIP. The other thing that's included in the budget is a Mill Creek Boulevard sub-area study. So now this is a little different from the CIP Mill Creek Boulevard Corridor Improvement Study. So the difference is the Mill Creek Boulevard sub-area study looks at the land use along Mill Creek, and it looks really at an economic study as to do we have the right zoning and land use. We're talking comprehensive plan. And in the heels of that, then we have the CIP that looks at the corridor improvements. And so some of the things that can come out of the sub-area study is, for instance, do we want to have on-street parking or off-street parking? And we certainly would want to know that before we do the corridor improvements or even design the corridor improvements. So this Mill Creek Boulevard sub-area study would be led by my planning branch, and that would take its own course. And as we're concluding that, we would kick off the Mill Creek Boulevard Corridor Improvement Study. So that's something that's new in the 2019-2020 budget.
And you'll be working with the property owners, because it doesn't do us any good to plan if they're not.
Certainly. There's Correct. There's a community engagement aspect to it.
On a related tangent, gosh, 3 or 4 years ago, we were looking at an ordinance to deal with properties along, dealt with the buffer, critical areas, change to the critical areas regulations to address redevelopment of the properties on what would be the west side of Mill Creek Boulevard. Mm-hmm. Whatever happened to that ordinance? I thought we were close to the finish line and then it kind of disappeared.
Yeah, the people who weren't here then.
Yeah. Ask Tom, because my recollection was, and I could be wrong, was that we were waiting for some comments from ecology, and I never heard anything further about that. But that was supposed to be a piece of that puzzle to deal with the redevelopment on.
And how many years ago was that?
Sometime in the last five.
I think it was probably 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah, I think
brought this up.
Yeah. So we reviewed it and discussed it, and then it never came back to us.
This reduced the width.
It dealt with redevelopment.
Like if we tore the City Hall North down, we can't put it back up unless we go exactly on the footprint.
Right.
So Tom said that there were ways that we would be able to redevelop and have other people redevelop while protecting the buffers.
So with all of these tilt-up buildings along North Creek, mm-hmm. felt like all those owners were stuck with what they've got as their current footprint. And some of us, although maybe against the rules, was mm-hmm. if you don't make it any worse, in fact, if you made it 10% better by putting in filters that we don't have now off of our own parking lots, I'd be happy if they redeveloped that building or the next one down, if they made it better, but you're never going to get to the 300-foot buffer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As soon as you touch that, that becomes nothing. Mm-hmm. So those people are going to have those tilt-up buildings of lesser and lesser economic value, and it just didn't seem like it was a good thing for our mm-hmm. main.
Before we get to that,
yeah.
I think we need to address the critical areas issue first.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's good. Both sides of Mill Creek Boulevard. It's a shame to talk to Panos about doing something cool on his side, and it turned out everybody over here still got stuck.
A couple other things as far as projects. It is important to notice, and again, this is reflected in the CIP. Snohomish County, in the past, they have supported us with pavement marking. So striping and raised pavement markers. Snohomish County themselves, of course, we all know, are growing. And so their operations and maintenance, even for them internally, are focusing more on operations and maintenance rather than capital delivery. So because of that, they are limited in the support that they can provide to us on pavement marking for next year, at least for sure next year, and probably 2020. And so the CIP reflects that. It reflects us putting together a big packet and advertise it so that we can actually have refreshed pavement markings in Mill Creek. Snohomish County has confirmed they will not be able to do it in 2019. The last thing that I have here to share with you is franchise agreements. Not as exciting as projects, but still needed. And we have two. We have come to council with respect to the Frontier franchise agreement that expired, and we've extended the life of that agreement for a year. So we're working on that, and we're also working on starting to work on the PS&E Puget Energy Agreement, which expired actually in 2008. So it's been several years. So that's something that we're going to be working on over the next biennium.
Another tangent, speaking of PSE, did we ever get resolved on the repaving issue?
The
schedule for the PSE.
We're working on...
Are you still working on it?
Yeah, we're working on that. So the payment is installed. So what we're looking at is a credit.
So with the franchise agreement, what's the rub? I mean, what are you asking?
It's legal fees, so that's included in the budget. So for the Puget Sound Energy, we've engaged with Puget Sound Energy because of the same street project, and they've already informed us that their type of agreements take time, and it's not a cookie cutter, so to speak, and they want to customize it to every city. Mukilteo was successful in implementing their franchise agreement with them, so that's as close to loosely using the Trump template as we're going to use, and they have the same attorney that we do, Alana Sana, so that's a good thing. So it's just highlighting that the budget includes the legal fees associated with these two franchise agreements.
I thought that those things, if
I remember correctly, we are very limited on what we can negotiate. That there are set fees and structures that you just simply have to. It's more like a sign on the dotted line. Here's what you're getting. Right? I mean, am I wrong?
That's my understanding, but I haven't embarked on this, so I just know that Ilanasana recently executed a franchise agreement with Muckle 2, and she informed me that it was complex, and PSC said the same thing to me. I haven't studied the franchise agreement to really develop my own opinion about it. So.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Franchise agreements, it's a little bit different, but the 5G stuff that's coming at us, is sort of staff working on that, and
yes.
They have legal fees in there too. To
yes, we are working on that, and we're developing a work plan that I'll share with Bob here shortly in the upcoming days.
Yeah.
So we're aware of the January deadline.
Yeah, I'm nervous. I think everybody's nervous. I think all cities are nervous because it's coming at us pretty fast.
Mm-hmm.
And potentially a huge workload for you guys if you get to the mayor talking about that. You'd get a huge dump of all these applications all at once, and the shot clock is pretty quick to respond. So
yes, so we're putting a work plan to respond to that.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Right, and the last thing I had was continuous improvement or lean. So I'll share my overall philosophy, and I already did a little bit, and what I have learned in my time with the City of Mill Creek is that really, when we hire people and when we develop our people, we need to infuse this concept of adaptability versus a rigid type of thinking. And what I mean by that, for instance, myself, my schooling is in engineering. But to function as a director of this department, I cannot think of myself as a just engineer. I have to think about it from an economic perspective. I have to think about the department from a planning perspective. It's branching out from whatever our schooling is. And I see that with my staff. So I have planners that because of our surface water, we lost one surface water specialist, I have planners that are able to support the public answering surface water questions. So again, when I think about lean, and there's systems for leans and techniques for leans, but even before you impose systems on a group of people, there's a mindset that you want to set up. And I do believe that our staff is there because I see it on a day-to-day basis. And this is not a result of me. This is just who they are. They want to provide a good customer service, so they do their best. They study so that they can learn, and they can provide that service and answer those questions to the customers. So I just wanted to acknowledge that is that's something that I see, and it's been happening even before I got here. Now, there's a couple of things that come to my mind as well, and one is operations and maintenance. So we have a great supervisor in Nathan Beagle. He does a lot of work that I don't even know, which is great, but kind of concerns me. So one of the things that we have been working on, it's been a long-term project and that we've woven into our daily operations, is developing a spreadsheet, and it's a big spreadsheet of all the stuff that they work on. And so in preparing this, Nathan didn't just develop it himself. He actually involved the crew. And so all the different crew members took a part of this exercise and developed a spreadsheet so that we have an idea as to what are they working on, how long does it take, and what is the level of service. So that's something that is tied to a further discussion about the additional maintenance worker. But at this time, that's something that we have in hand, which is what is that body of work for our operations and maintenance? What is the level of service? How many hours does it take? And then the last thing I'll say as far as continuous improvement, the CIP, there's lots of things that organizations can do for continuous improvement. One of them is charters. Before you start a project, just having a charter. That is nice. In a smaller organization like ours, it is not required because there's so much communication. But I will say that in our CIP, for each and every single project, the purpose and need was studied, analyzed, and validated before the project went in the CIP. So it is the process that you follow in producing a charter. We definitely went through each one of those steps for every project in the CIP. So that's my overall presentation at 40,000 feet, Bob, for the department. Any questions?
I have a quick question on staffing counts, trying to look at 17, 18 versus 8.
Yes.
1920. Right, you're counting 16, right, for public works. Last year, it was broken out with community. What was
development?
It? Yeah.
Public works.
And was it Rick? Was it no? I don't think it was recreation. I think it was community development was under public works. Was that correct?
Community development was a separate department from public works.
Okay. So that was the 17, and then recreation was not under your department. That was under somebody else's.
It was an enterprise fund, separate, not a part of the general fund. Now we've moved it back into the general fund.
Okay, because that's quite a bit of reduction of the positions. That's why I got a little confused, because that was a total of, 17 or 22 positions under those three. And I look at the 1920, I don't see them all being replaced.
So initially what happened was when we developed the 17 and 18 budget, the thought process at the time was that recreation would report to Tom Rogers. And then we switched gears when Joni was hired in February, and she picked up recreation supervision.
That's why it's set this way, but eventually it switched.
Yeah.
Okay, and then that went under recreation. Recreation was under community.
Yeah.
Okay, got it. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Your communications, thank you.
Something that bounces around every year, and it's a sticking point for us sometimes, is code enforcement. And some of the code enforcement takes a police officer kind of attitude and capability, and some of it takes writing a letter to somebody for sign code enforcement and stuff like that. Where is it organizationally this year? What's the organization of the biennium?
Yeah, so Sherry Ringstad, over the past biennium, 17-18, she has been the lead code enforcement for the city. Okay. With police support, there is collaboration, but Sherry Ringstad has been the lead. 2019, 20 biennium, we're hiring a building official. We want some of those tasks to be shared or transferred to the building official, so it frees up Sherry for other tasks, such as grant writing, as an example.
That's still your organization,
yes,
as opposed
still my
to
the department. Mm-hmm.
Greg doesn't have this as a thing in his necessarily. He kind of helps when they need it.
Correct.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, is that then purely, I mean, because we've heard from one other citizen in particular, and this is this pet issue. Mm-hmm. Is that purely reactive then? Because Sherry isn't going out and driving.
It's purely a complaint based system.
Yeah.
So there's just not the staff resources to be aggressive and pursue code enforcement issues. Unless there's complaints or multiple complaints.
Correct.
Well, in the past, when the police had some involvement, were they, I mean, the police are the ones that are least out in the community. Is there any process where they note things and contact you, say, hey, I saw a trailer out in Highlands West, it may not comply, and then you guys go out and look at it?
Certainly. I mean, that happens not just with police, with any staff member, operations and maintenance as well.
The actual gaining complaints is where resources really come into play, and that's where we fall short in terms of gaining compliance from a code enforcement violation, particularly a land use issue.
Well, that's the back end. I'm just looking at the front end, because what I hear a lot from a couple people is, what is the city doing proactively? And there's no question we're reacting when someone files a complaint, but I think there's a few people that think we should be doing more proactively to be checking for violations.
Yeah. But there's certainly the need to have that. There's just not enough resources, though, to devote to that, unless we create a position for that. Mm-hmm. I agree, though.
The reason I grabbed this is, you know, that's one of the things we like about Mill Creek is the look and feel of Mill Creek. And I'll pick on signs for a minute. You know, you let one sign, oh, that's not that bad, but then there's another one, and somebody else goes by the sign just like it. So I've talked to Tom Rogers over the years, and you guys probably talked to him too about that. You know, the original intent of the sidewalk sign was a nice wrought iron sign, and it's turned into A-boards and things like that. And I feel sorry for a small business that goes spends a couple $100 on an A-board, and then we come along and go, nope, that's not good enough. You should spend $400 on this kind. But it's a slippery slope. It's hard to get back up on that. And I think it's one of our core, we don't know exactly where to find it here, but I think it's one of our goals was community preservation, the look and feel. We do not want to lose that. Mm-hmm. And so we don't have the money in the budget right now, but boy, this is a, it would be nice for me. It has been for a long time for us to do a more proactive get out there and take a sweep every once in a while. Don't depend on me to send in something. I'll send in more if I know that it's all based on complaints. I'll run up some more complaints. But we've got businesses that violate the one-month special thing, you know, public forum, but that, you know, McDonald's has had their $1 soft drink thing up there for about 6 months now, and I'm just tired of looking at it. And it's because they've done it, everybody else does it. So we got to do something to kind of stay on top of these, in my mind.
Well, I mean, that goes again with the question about the code enforcement, and there's no doubt, I mean, at this point, because of the size of the department, we are stretched thin,
yeah.
and that would be a desirable situation, not possible with the department size at this point.
So that's probably a message. You were talking earlier about what are we giving up? Yeah, we don't want taxes to go up, but what do we give up? And some of these things are safety is important to us, so we fund our cops at a pretty good level. But look and feel is something else too. And once you lose either one of those things, it's tough to get it back. So,
any other questions for about Public Works? So we're going to jump into the Executive Department, and the Executive Department is comprised of the City Manager's Office, City Clerk, Human Resources, and IT. I left the chart up on the screen from the previous presentation, and represents 8% of the total general fund expenses. And you, if you look, if you're following in the budget book, on page 87 gives you an overview of the 2015, 16, 17, 18 estimated actuals compared to the budget. Obviously, a big decrease you see in the city manager's office from $1.6 million to $641,000. It's only because we pulled out HR and city clerk expenses. So very comparable in terms of if you add those back in, at least when you look at the total. We're estimating at $2.4 million we'll finish the biennium, and we're proposing $2.3 for the future biennium. And so the largest sort of decrease, I guess, in overall expenses is a result of some legal expenses going down. You'll see that also, and at least projected to go down. You'll see that also in the legislative department, too, where you have a significant amount of legal expenses that you expect to finish the year out, and we're not planning for that, and of course, 19 and 20. In the previous pages, there's two pages prior to that really note sort of the notable budget highlights of each of the divisions. In the city manager's office, of course, is the recruitment of the city manager, and then we've included the feasibility, the development, or the conduct the development feasibility study to develop opportunities, or to identify opportunities, rather, on the Dobson Remulite property. And these were include, you know, various desired and possible land uses that could occur on these sites or around the surrounding properties. That would be recreation related, could be hospitality related, could be commercial office related, as well as residential. So we want to examine all the different types of land uses that could help promote economic development and tourism related activities on those properties. And so that development feasibility study would be important. Then you see in the city clerk division, a decrease again in some of the legal services related to public records processing. We have a number of IT related items moving forward in this 19-20 budget, new servers that would help us with capacity as well as resiliency. We have some new equipment that we're bringing on board, copiers, laptop computers. And so all that rolled in, we're still, we expect to be less than the 2017-2018 biennium. Staff is the same. We will reduce our, one is a 0.8 FTE, almost a full person, who's our HR director now, and she's going to be retiring, and we're not replacing that FTE position after the first quarter of 2019. So that's kind of a real high-level overview of what's included in the executive department budget, and we can...
You said public records is down. That is, but it's not really a change in FTE. It's just how much money we're going to spend on that, because it's mostly just labor, isn't it, to do the public records stuff? Or is that...
Labor and legal fees.
Yeah.
Well, legal fees go with the
mostly was the 50,000, right? A decrease in legal fees associated with public records.
That.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
We actually anticipate public records will continue at a
same pace, but yeah.
Yeah, but just the legal fees associated with that has gone down.
Well, in my sense is that staff is making that a better process, an easier process. I think you guys are headed in the right direction in terms of simplifying and making it easier for people to do public records requests or get more stuff on the website. So we're headed
yeah,
good there.
Yeah, the software that they obtained has been really instrumental in
yeah.
that.
But so but the monetary difference is because of legal fees.
Legal fees, yeah. There's still a heavy workload. Yeah. In fact, one of the positions that was recommended, and I'm going to, next week you'll receive sort of a narrative of the importance of all three of the positions that are not funded in the budget, but were submitted by the department directors, and a deputy city clerk position is one of those three, which would help with the public records issues. But again, just due to the finite resources that we have available to us, it wasn't able to be put into the budget. In addition, you have a maintenance worker as well as a police officer position too.
So if we went with the 1% increase we talked about earlier, would that allow those three positions to be funded or not?
Well, maybe one of them.
$62,000.
Yeah,
it's
quite a bit.
624.
Yeah, plus
a
little bit of
compounding,
but it's not a lot.
Yeah, it's 80,000 with the EMS, and then the 2 year because you've compounded, so it's 150, 160,000 or so. You get pretty close to being able to support one of those positions.
Ish. Yeah. The IT is. You mentioned a lot of things like servers and resiliency and things like that. Some of that sounds like equipment, but it is not capital because it's short life, or is this what you mentioned was work to go with capital? I can't remember
it's
what
it's the first time we're buying it, so it runs through capital outlay. Yep. And then as we want to replace it, we'll use the concept of depreciation to save up for the next acquisition.
Okay, yeah, so capital outlay for some servers, but then you're going to start charging James and his department for some readable life on that.
Yep.
Yeah, the most of it's for servers, and there's some network switch upgrades, and there's a copier replacement. So, but there's $120,000 of just new stuff that we need to have to keep the city operating. And there's $30,000 of some new software issues, too, that help sort of process issues.
Okay.
Is that it?
Yeah, and so then if you go down over to the legislative department, the big change that you see from the 17-18 on page 71 is really just a decrease in legislative fees or legal fees. So we're anticipating finishing the 17-18 out at $472,000, almost $473,000, and we're dropping that down to less than $150,000 over the biennium.
Is the 150 kind of comparable to what we were budgeted? Is that kind of a normal run rate?
It is, yeah. We've included your fees included with the executive recruitment search firm, so that's an additional amount.
Okay.
Yeah. And you have reestablished some of your conference fees that you had in previous years. We put that into the 19-20 budget. But beyond that, it's if you remove the legal spike, that would be a normal amount for you. As it was, if you look at 15-16, you're pretty close to that at 140, and it's probably just inflation that's picking up to 148.
So where do things like our memberships in Economic Alliance and stuff like that happen?
In the department.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So yeah. We'll go through that. I think that's slated for the next.
Yeah. Which session. Is a big chunk of money because it also has fire at 28% too.
Yeah, fire. Yeah, I have to go into that. I was just saying, I think there's things that we are important to, I guess as council, it's important to me that we spend the $200 to be part of SCC. I think it's important that we should be part of SCIT, part of SCC IT, that we are not paying dues on right now, but that's a new thing. I think we should consider that. EWC, I think, is part of our dues. I don't get some question. It sounds like you put some money back in for training and conference.
Well, but, yeah.
I think it's really important that council members.
Yeah, we actually increased it $2,500 so that since there's new people.
Yeah, those are economical kinds of trainings to do.
Right.
And the one that we haven't talked about here, we've kind of avoided it in the past, but is this health district ask has been out there before. I think I've heard them out there going again for their buck a person or $2 a person or something or other, which a couple of years ago, I think we said, we were on the board at the time, I think we said, thanks, but no thanks, we couldn't afford it. But have we thought about that? Or
didn't we budget a dollar?
No.
We did a lump sum payment. Yeah,
they'll be
ask
back
us to, but
they'll, be back
they'll take whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but right now there's nothing in there for it.
Another thing we're going to cover tonight, there's a number of funds that Peggy's going to review with you briefly.
Right. So I thought we'd cover the special revenue funds. Gina's talked about her city streets, where we talked about the bucket truck. We've got a couple of funds that don't have expenditures that I think we should raise, since I spoke to Councilmember Bond earlier this evening. Council contingency is one that has no expenditures associated with it. Right now, there's no expenditures or appropriations for the drug buy fund. We did a slew of appropriations in the last biennium as we got the gear up to speed and the training. So right now,
is there a particular page this is on?
Well, we can walk through it together on starting on page 53. And so the street fund, Gina's covered. We've got the council contingency fund that's up next. The discussion that I had with Councilmember Bond earlier tonight was, what do we do with the senior center? Included in non-department right now, I have budgeted the same level of support that we did in the 17-18 biennium. I think there's been conversations related to that, that may not be enough to cover their needs. So this would be one area that we could tap into. There's a $61,000 balance in that fund. If you guys wanted to discuss that, that's something that we could take up.
Are you referring to the monies that Barb brought up?
And you know, next year we're going to have to come up with policies, because one person asks and the next person asks. You know, the chamber wanted free space, then somebody else does. Or somebody wants a parade and somebody else does. So these are some policy decisions we need to work on next year about what are we going to do. And because there's a whole lot of worthy people out there, worthy groups, and we need to have a policy about what we do. So what's in there now, $25,000?
Yeah, that's in the general fund.
Plus they get $70,000 from the county.
No, sure.
Yeah.
So right now we have no appropriations for council contingency. Again, the drug buy fund has no appropriations.
And with council contingency, we can do a budget amendment at any
time. Oh, yeah, at any time.
So once we come up with our policy, whatever it's going to be when we talk about it, then we can go ahead and do whatever we want, because the $61,000 is sitting there. So we can say we know we're going to do something, but we haven't had a chance to look at it.
Right.
I think it's a good idea. I would definitely support helping out the seniors a little bit more.
The next fund on page 56 is the Municipal Arts Fund. As you will recall, we instituted, when we were going through the capital improvement plan, funding that with 1% of certain types of projects. We've got revenue of $20,000 going in. That fund is going to support the historic project, preservation project. That's $25,000 going out. I put an additional $5,000 in there. Seems like we've spent some money. I don't know if this goes back to the signs or not, but I put an appropriation in there should you choose to spend that in a manner that's consistent with what you see fit.
This fund is a percentage, right? It's how it's calculated?
So the revenue coming in is 1% of certain types of CIP projects.
Right, okay.
And
that's where the $30,000 comes from?
The $30,000 is the expenditure. The revenue is, which is on a different page, is $23,000. So we get $20,000 in the 1% that we're going to assess on capital projects. And then there's typically some money related to donations that comes into this related to the monument.
But the 1% is roughly $20,000.
Yes.
Okay.
And it's specific to projects, right?
Yes. CIP projects. Paths and Trails is a fund that we get money from motor vehicle tax, which is part of the state shared revenue. We don't get a whole lot. It's $4,000, but over the years it's been adding up. And so we've slated $10,005 to go into our CIP projects for the trail preservation. Let's see, capital projects I think we've talked about, and there's a pretty good summary of what projects are with what funds, so I won't go through those again. Debt service fund, the only thing that we have going in here is related to the hardware radio for SERS. That will be paid off in 19. We have like $32,000 left, and then again, as we are all happy that that
Proposition one
passed, and we've got the 1% to fund it, because it could have been a big pill to swallow if local jurisdictions would have had to pick that up.
It would have been between 1.2 and 1.7 million.
Wow. That's what that is?
Yeah, that's going to pay for our radios and our system.
Wow.
Lump sum, and then you would have bought.
You had to pay for it or finance it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, that was a good win. The other fund that we have in here, we have no appropriations for and haven't for the past couple of years, is our local revitalization fund. It's associated with the eGov development area. Apparently, I think it was back in 2009, we had applied for funds from the county. I think it's up to $330,000. We've received about $125,000 through 2019. I expect to receive another $100,000. And those proceeds, I believe, are to be able to go out and facilitate debt to improve that area to help pay for the principal payments. But right now, all we've been doing is collecting money.
So its primary purpose is in providing public infrastructure to support development?
Yep. For that specific location.
It wasn't it intended to fund the city's financing for the spinal stuff?
Mm.
There was a state made a deal where they would give you some of the spine tax, and the county is required to get part of the tax. I think just the state part of the tax comes to us in return for having this revitalization effort. So we applied for it and got it. But it turns out that project, the money didn't come in as fast, because that happened right before the recession.
And it's specific to ego.
The next fund is surface water. I think we've covered that at length right now, so I'll skip that one. And then the next fund is our equipment replacement fund, which is considered an internal service fund under the section of proprietary funds. We've got some assets slated to purchase this year. We've got 5 police cars. There's some rugged laptops that need to be replaced, and those have all been funded, and the money is sitting in the equipment replacement fund. And the other one was what Gina alluded to earlier. We've got the bucket truck, and there's $30,000 set aside to pay for that. And then there's one car, one all-city vehicle car that's fully funded in the equipment replacement fund, that we would like to go out and replace that. I would just like to make a comment overall from the finance person's perspective. You have $1.7 million in basis or assets that you've purchased over the years, and of those assets, you've depreciated 94%. So what that says to me, as somebody coming in to look at, you know, how you're doing at replacing the assets, we probably aren't replacing them as fast as we should.
You're fully depreciated 94%?
Yes.
Wow.
So
yeah, that's true.
We need to update the vehicles and whatnot that's included in there as we move forward.
So your other approach is to say the 2004 Stratus only has 40,000 miles on it. So yes, it's fully depreciated beyond, but it's only got 40,000 miles on it, or whatever it is. And so you're here for getting lots of life out of those things instead of just turning them in because they're 5 years old.
That's exactly right. Same thing with computers. I don't buy that 3 to 5 years. Those computers last 8.
Yeah.
Now, James and I will arm wrestle over that. But
I'm glad you're arm wrestling.
We are. And then the last one is our unemployment compensation self-insurance fund. We're required to put money in that. I do need to develop a policy for that, which I will do before we produce this budget. Right now, based on some reorganization, I've included an appropriation for $20,000. That's really just a thumbnail. I don't know what that number is going to be, but I've at least included something in that to pay for any unemployment claims that we may encounter.
And we're much better off than being part of employment security.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know, yeah, one thing we don't talk about, we talked about taxes, that debt service. I mean, with all that goes on in Seattle, them passing bonds for this, that, and the other thing, I don't know that the public is really aware that we have next to no debt.
Yeah.
So when we talk about being debt-free, and we, I don't know if that's historically been the case or if we've done stuff in the past, but...
not many. There have not been many.
Where's the Public Works Trust Fund payments? That's
in surface water.
So overall, how much debt do we have? If you said how much debt do we have?
Are you excluding the general fund loan?
Well, that's debt.
Yeah, so $500,000. I can't remember what the balance on the public. Seems like we've got at least five more years, and it's 90,000. Yeah, so maybe we're looking at...
$1,000,001, $1,002,000. I saw the thing come through the state.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Less than $1 million in that public works trust fund loan.
Oh, yeah, much lower than that.
It's really low interest rate.
Yeah. It doesn't get talked about much.
Right.
So that's all we have for this evening. We'll pick the rest of this up back on the 27th.
Okay, we got a few more things.
So the equipment replacement fund kind of got moved around. Is it
reestablished? It? Yeah.
This year in this biennium, we reestablished it, so you got money to.
Yeah. So we had $1,500,000 in there,
okay.
And then what we weren't doing was making the ratable depreciation amount. So I shored that up.
Okay.
So that it can be total.
And you're fixing that in this biennium is where you found some this extra money.
Yeah, so this biennium we should have it fixed and up and going.
Oh, you're
sure. Now you're going to have to take a budget amendment for that because that wasn't contemplated initially.
Okay. So that is yet to come, the
yes.
Budget amendment to fix that.
Yes.
Get that fund back to where it should have been.
Right.
Okay, so let's get going. Study sessions are over. Oh, no, we have the Mill Creek Sports Park.
Good news is this is pretty brief, and we also have the study session tonight, so we can come back in 2 weeks and discuss it a little bit more. As you all know, the Mill Creek Sports Park is a 64,000 square foot field that we use, and it serves about 3,800 youth each year for about 2,100 hours, 330 days a year. It's highly used, and you'd be surprised to learn that even in months like this, it is very popular. We recently issued the RFP for the turf and light replacement at the park, and that will bring a lot of great changes to the sports park in early next year, so long as we pass it in this body in a couple weeks here. So the turf currently is in poor condition. It's the original turf. We're replacing it with a very nice synthetic turf with chrome rubber and sand fill. It has lines that are appropriate for the different user groups. I know Mike, Councilmember Todd, has worked with our folks as well. So soccer, little league, softball lines. We are extending the baselines from the baseline. So the 60-foot lines right now, we're going to extend out to 65 and 70 feet so that we can bring in other leagues to play or start some adult leagues on the field and make it a little bit more accessible to other folks. So in addition to the field, we are actually replacing the lights. That's a big deal for us. The lights right now are failing off and on. We had to have a late run out to the park tonight to turn on the lights there. But we're replacing them with LED lights that are supposed to have a guaranteed lifetime of 25 years. So when we're looking at what we're bringing to this park, we thought it's time to analyze what we're doing rate-wise. And the last time the rates were updated at the sports park was in 2013, and that was based on 2012 research. So we took a peek at what's happening around Snohomish County and in King County with synthetic turf fields. And that's what the rates you'll see on page 2 of your agenda summary, most comparisons. So when we looked at the rates, we didn't want to just apply a magical rate and say, let's raise our rates. We want to be cognizant of what the market holds, what we're bringing to the table in terms of a new and improved field that's going to last us for quite a while because of the quality we're putting in. But we also wanted to be aware of of continuing impacts. So we don't want to just keep investing money into a field and not actually help share the burden. So specifically with the lights, I know that's an issue. We're raising it $5 an hour. That's our proposal. So when we look at the cost of lights alone in this project at the sports park right now, it's $270,000. And with the price increase over the lifespan of those lights, so 25 years, the increased revenue would only bring in $99,000. So it's not even close to half of the price of installing those lights. In regards to the field rentals, it's a very minimal increase. The cost of inflation over the same time period would have been $3.01. We're asking for a $6 increase for the lowest figure on the field. It varies dependent on user group and where they're based in, what location. So with that in mind, I will entertain any questions you have on this rate proposal that we're presenting to you.
Do you anticipate a savings in the cost to run the lights switching to LED?
Yes. We do anticipate, but we talked to PUD in 2016 when we were looking at this grant. They anticipate a 63% decrease in increase in efficiency, which is about a $6,000 decrease. But we also have to realize that the cost of electricity is going up every year. So last year alone, it went up 3%. And we're paying a per day rate as well as a per kilowatt hour rate. So part of that we have to offset as we're looking at rates.
Did you ask any of these jurisdictions whether they distinguish rates by user group? So, for instance, I talked to the Little League, and the city of Shoreline doesn't charge their Little League to use their field.
I'm going to ask the expert in the house. And since he's here for his first time, I'm also going to introduce Recreation Coordinator Jay Sandstrom, who's been patiently waiting to get to the topic. Jay.
Sorry, can you ask the question again?
In surveying these cities and asking what the rates are, my understanding is some jurisdictions offer special user groups discounted rates.
Yeah, so we do have different rates for groups that are 51% or larger in the city of Oak Creek. So that is the difference that you're going to see looking at different rates, different fields, is are they local residents? And primarily the discount that you're going to see is for youth versus adult.
I'm not sure that's answering what I was really asking.
I did not.
Okay.
I don't know if I can answer the question.
That's fair. I mean, I would just be, I don't know that I want to go there, but this kind of opens a can of worms. But going back to our discussion we had on the cost of replacing a roof at Cougar Park, you know, I struggle with why do we charge user groups to use Freedom Field, yet we don't treat the parks in the same way. We have the same capital costs. I struggle philosophically with why we charge groups for that park, but not groups at other. I'm not advocating we charge other groups to use those parks, but I'm not sure I understand the equity there. And so that's why I would ask that you look at, and this gets to the sounds like we're trying to focus on groups that are based in the city, that have a connection with the city, but I think we really need to look at the equity of some of those rates to update your chart. The county does charge for lights per hour. They charge $25. So for the Little League, we talked about the impact of raising surface water rates and property taxes. For Mill Creek families, this will raise the cost of kids participating in Little League, and I don't know what the rate
soccer,
are for soccer.
It's
well.
$5 a kid for soccer, is what they figure.
So, you know, I think that goes back to some of what we talked about, policy decisions we make. You know, because it's interesting going back to the funding that parks versus the sports park. I'll tell you, the people that go to the games at the sports park are the ones that are more likely to, after the games, come to town center and go to dinner at a restaurant than the people who go to Cougar Park to play on the swing. So I would ask that we survey a little more, ask a little more specific questions, whether any of these jurisdictions have discounted rates for certain groups, particularly youth groups. I would like to have a conversation about whether or not we need to be doing something different, whether it's youth soccer, youth baseball, because
I mean, looking at the increases, they haven't been touched since 13, so What's your question then? I thought they were pretty modest, given the comparative analysis.
That's an hourly rate, and so once you compound the number of hours that the Little League puts into that field, that's a substantial amount of their budget. It's paying for the use of the fields to the city, to the school district, to wherever they can find the fields, and it's getting harder and harder for them to find the fields. I mean, the cost of a Little League the last 10 years for a kid to participate has gone up from 120 to, I think, it's now 260. So I can't sit here and tell you what this is going to add to the cost of a kid participating in youth soccer or participating in Little League, but I think we as a city need to at least think about that when we're deciding what to do with these rates. Because I'm not sure, are we trying to offset long-term capital costs? Are we trying to offset O&M costs by recovering these fees? And then the other bugaboo for me is, and this is a small dollar figure, but then on top of that, the city takes a percent. The Little League is the only one that uses a concession stand. And they use it to raise funds for their nonprofit organization. The city takes a percentage of the gross revenues from the concession stand.
Is there a reason for that?
That's a great question, and we had a hard time finding out because the only contract I can find is 2011. It was specifically for that year, so part of our 2019 plan is to identify what our approach is moving forward with this group in particular.
So it doesn't work out to large dollar figures. I understand it might be $2,000 to $4,000 a year, but that's $2,000 to $4,000 that doesn't get plugged back into the youth group.
Plus, it doesn't feel good because I can tell you I had schlepped a ton of burgers at that concession stand. And then to have a portion of it, I'd rather, I don't know, it just doesn't feel good.
Wasn't that the portion that was to maintain it so that it was available as a revenue generator for the nonprofit? So they had a place to do hot food and make money and.
I think they were utilities.
Yeah, you got to fund it somehow.
They pay rent. They pay rent plus, if I remember right from the lease, there's a flat charge for utilities, $50 a month on top of the flat or utility or flat rental rate. Then on top of that, there's 8% of the gross receipts, the gross revenues.
That's something limited to see exactly it is.
Well, Brian is absolutely correct for. This 2011 contract, that is exactly what's in place, but it is definitely worth revisiting, so thank you for raising that to our attention.
So, unlike taxes, where we have to raise them or not, on the 27th to get them filed in time, this is something we can address at any time.
Correct. We were hoping to start a year whole and make sure that when we apply a rate, we apply it consistently across all user groups throughout the year. You know, really speaking, if we're looking at investing significantly into this bill, the people that should be helping us offset that cost a little bit are the user groups that are using it. You know, a lot of people can use Cougar Park, a lot of people can go to these different parks, but because they're at capacity with user groups on the Mill Creek Sports Park, it makes sense that those users are helping offset a little bit of the cost with a very minor increase.
And that my concern too is if we're going to raise rates, the best time to do it is when you put a whole new turf in and all new lights in. Mm-hmm. People are going to be just pumped beyond belief, and if they've got to pay a few extra bucks or a year per kid or whatever, I think they're going to be happy about it because they got a much better environment for their kid to play.
7-8 years from now, you're going to have to do it again.
Yeah.
So.
Just like we're going to need to replace the rest of Cooper Park and put it in.
No, these are lights.
Not even close.
The lights are going to have to light.
Yeah. I hate to raise the fees if we're not going to do anything with the turf or do anything with the lights or the sound system, and all of a sudden you get a big fee increase and you're seeing no difference in the park. So now's the time to do it if you're going to do it, I think.
So we've commented that just inflation since 2013 would have been $3, and so you guys proposed $6. I had a hard time going with that. I'm also going to go way back. I've got a long history with this because I was on the Parks Board when this was being done and then on the council. Original approach on the lights was, that's the utility cost. Let's make sure we cover for the lights. And those lights were only turned on when user groups were using them. Mm-hmm. So I personally had a key as a soccer guy and went and turned the lights off on the honor system because we only rented the lights until 6 o'clock. On Saturday night, and so I would go out and turn them off and tell the staff that I'd turn them off. So when I got charged for that, well, pretty quickly figured out that if you turn the lights off in the field, bad stuff happens on the field. Bad stuff happens other places. And so the city has a policy of leaving the lights on until 10 o'clock every night, whether it's rented or not. Mm. And so the winter sports get to pay for those lights, whether, you know, you're using the winter sports folks who are using paying for the lights, get to pay for the lights because of the privilege of being there, but other people own them. Okay.
We need to extend. How much?
Extend to 9 o'clock. Motion to extend to 9.
Second.
A motion and a second to extend to 9 o'clock. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Passes unanimously.
Our utility costs have gone a little bit over the years, and so instead of being $8 or $9 worth of electricity was the gas because it wasn't separately metered. But that's how it was originally set at $12. We've gone up since then. Tambar Creek, comparable field, available to us. It's a huge field. It's tough for baseball. Sometimes use it. But it is four times the size of Mill Creek Sports Park as far as a soccer organization. And so for $60 versus $28, they're getting twice the value. And $20 or $25 is what you said. It says $20 on the county website for the lights out there versus $20 here. You're going to price yourself out of what these groups are trying to do. Now, luckily, there's more demand through all the sports than there is. But you got to be careful you don't get to where the school district is. Where the school district has fields that nobody will use because they charge way too much. So Lincoln Field is notoriously unused because it's $100+ an hour. So the school district is replacing that field. They're on their second iteration. They've had very little revenue users for it because it's just too darn expensive. So be careful you don't price out these volunteer-run organizations who have a lot of folks who put a lot of time and effort into it, so you don't have to run like a basketball program where you guys put a lot of time into it. This is volunteer groups doing good things for our community. And as you point out, these are the folks who come and enjoy those contests are more likely to stay and do good things in Mill Creek in many cases than other folks. So you just got to be careful what we do here. Yeah, it's only a few dollars, but
couple thoughts after what you just said, Mike, was we originally charged them for the lights, right, as a separate fee.
Correct.
And what I just heard is we always leave the lights on.
So I do the monthly billing for the sports park, and it is calculated by the time that they have the field.
So yeah. Nobody has to go, there's the fee for lights and then lights. Yeah. Different option.
So the sports park during the week, Monday through Friday, is booked 4 to 9 p.m. On weekends, it's booked 8 to 8 pretty much every single week of the year. Those light fees are broken down by hour based on the days that it's used. So once their reservation ends, they're no longer being charged by us for the lights.
But the point is that the cost to the city goes until 10 o'clock, and they turn them off at 10 o'clock. And so if the soccer club leaves at 8, you pay for your side. You know, you don't get the soccer club's help. I'm just, the cost per hour for a winter sport that has those lights is not the $28 to use the field. It's 28 plus the light fee. That makes it a $48 an hour cost for a soccer kid to use it in the fall.
Can we get a breakdown when this comes back of the user groups and the amount of time per year that they use it? Because the other way I look at this, too, is I want to see who the users are, because I look at Little League different than I do a select league, where a family is paying $250 per kid to be in Little League as opposed to a family who's paying $3,000 for a select team that may be made up of kids that aren't just from Mill Creek, that don't hit that 50% or 51% threshold. So I'd be interested to see the breakdown of all the users and the hours that they use it.
I have the predominant three groups that use it, the Little League, the Washington Rush Soccer, and the Silver Lake Soccer Group, by hours throughout the year. And it's predominantly, if you've set the Mill Creek Little League, at 1,025 hours.
So two of those would be, one of those is the select. The
Rush is select. Soccer. Yeah.
And they use the field the least amount of time out of the year. So Washington Rush has an agreement with Silver Lake Soccer Club to use the field, and they use it for a couple hours generally on weekends.
So they use it for game space during the fall, and in the winter when there's no kids' recreational soccer. Then I think Washington Rust uses it for practices and stuff, too, I think. I don't see Cash Park in here, too. Cash is the main competitor for soccer.
Okay. And Phil Johnson up in Everett. Because I think they charge less than what the city does. And I think, didn't they just redo those fields up at Phil Johnson or something like that?
And I think that turf, I know that's what our comparisons were.
Yeah, but that's apples to oranges. The turf is going to have an ongoing maintenance cost as opposed to, I mean, we don't mow the artificial turf, but we have to replace it every 10 or 15 or 17 years. So I don't know how you compare that, but I'd just be interested to know what rates they charge.
Okay.
Jackson High School, I think, is $30 an hour. It's not lighted, but Jackson High School is the alternative. And again, that's twice as big as Sprint Park as far as soccer is concerned.
And very limited. And who can use it?
Yes. Very, very, yeah, nowhere near the comparison.
Which field? I'm sorry.
It's like a Jackson second field. Oh,
yeah.
Football field.
It's a good bad.
Yeah,
I'm
now there's no open rentable space that's not inside the school house.
It's just simply spoken.
So is it a field that there is the rates it's going to create vacancy? Or is it just it's going to create hardship?
It's going to raise the rates for the kids.
Yeah, it's going to raise the rates. Is it going to create a vacancy or is it going to create a hardship? One or the other. Because I don't think it's going to create a vacancy, but they're still going to use it.
Right. The league's not going to go away.
That's not going to change.
It's the hardship.
Sorry. It's the hardship period. And so, my gosh, you know, I think you need to do some type of fee increase without the upgrades you're giving them. I don't know what the fee increase would be, but comparables, I mean, going to Everett or going to Jackson is nowhere near what it's like to perform it. At the sports park, it's just that's a treat. That's just an experience.
It's a quality product.
It really is. It's phenomenal.
Well, but that gets to my policy question. What are we charging for? Are we charging for a quality product, or are we trying to offset our costs? I'm not saying I have the answer. I'm just not sure that we have a consensus of what our goal is in charging a fee, other than saying, well, the market's charging this fee, so let's charge it too. So if we're in private business and you're offering this as a service, yes, we charge what the market would bear. I think we have a policy decision to make of what we should be charging for use of a park. Are we trying to recoup our capital costs over time for the improvements that we're putting into it? Are we trying to cover our O&M on an annual basis?
The operational costs. Absolutely.
I don't know. And do we want to make a policy decision of do we want to distinguish user groups? It sounds like in our case, most of the user groups are the ones that we'd want to benefit from a reduced rate, but I'm just asking that we look at all this and have a discussion about it.
Okay. Anything else tonight on that? Okay, so we'll move to the consent agenda. Approval of checks number 59273 through 59408 and ACH wire transfers in the amount of $972,506.95. Audit Committee Mayor Pruitt and Council Member Todd. No exceptions?
No exceptions. Oh, that was the thickest stack I've ever seen.
Yeah. Okay, and payroll and ACH ACH payments in the amount of $279,513.66. No exceptions?
No exceptions.
Do we have a motion to approve the consent agenda?
So moved.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstentions? Passes unanimously. Report. I'll skip it tonight. Councilmember Cavallari?
No report, Mayor.
Councilmember Vaughn?
So I toured the senior center to get a feel for what Barbara was talking about last week and try and get my head around what we're doing good up there, what we weren't. So I'll be honest, I thought when moving them up there, all our problems were solved and everything was good, and that wasn't really thinking about the needs of the senior center or whatever. There are some things going on up there. The parking is a challenge and a few other things that at some point we should talk about. We have too full of a plate and it's getting late to tackle it tonight or even in the next couple of meetings. But it's probably sometime next year we should chat about it, see if there's anything we can do to help out. If nothing else, maybe learn from the mistake of the way we parked that and approved the planning. I don't like it. They do a line dancing class for 15 people
for 3 hours. They do Tai Chi for 2 hours. They don't have the space for it, so they are renting from the Grange. They had a couple other options that were cheaper, but they didn't work due to parking and location and a few other concerns. The Grange right now is the preferred alternative. It's $2,500. The ask was $2,500 for a year. 2 years would give them a two-year window if we chose to make a to increase our contribution from where we're at already to $2,500 more for next year. Buys them 1 year to just sort of see what's going on. There are some other options that we could talk about. The ask was for $2,500 for 2 years. We have money in the council contingency plan program to fund that if we want to. I'm just kind of throwing it out there. I think we should consider it. Maybe we could find a few minutes to talk about it sometime between now and January. I'm not sure. But I would be interested if there's three or more of you that agree, we could try to put it on agenda. If I'm the only one, then I understand.
I think you make a great point.
And I think it has to be part of a discussion about what happens when every other group comes and says, I only need $2,500 to go do whatever. We have to have a policy so that it protects us. We can help, you know, helping everybody. We can't do that. So we need to have, you're right, we need a discussion that comes up with a policy that we can say, okay, we're going to do this, but this doesn't qualify.
We already have a commitment with the seniors, so he's just asking for an increase. A slight increase. Go ahead.
This is a little different situation because we negotiated this as part of the development agreement that we were party to, and I think what we're finding is we didn't negotiate ideally what we could have or should have. And I'm wondering if there's another solution. I don't know if this is one you're thinking of. Is with Ryan and the development agreement will be coming to us early next year for the farm, whether or not there might be an opportunity to swap a better space in the new development for the...
There are some options, and they have space at Vintage that's right. Not even developed right now, that is just kind of in limbo. We could maybe partner with them to take advantage of that space. But that discussion is going to take some time, and we have very full agendas for the foreseeable future. The short fix is we give them $2,500 and we buy 1 year to kick the can down the road. It's an increase. We've already determined that the needs of our seniors are a priority, and we already fund them. So the criteria of this council has already been met. I'm simply saying let's bump it up a little for this specific need, buy us some time, and then revisit it.
Can we see if there's a lot of retail space there that's not rented?
Exactly.
And unlikely to be rented. Can we talk to them and see if we could perhaps let them use one of the spaces? Not wait till the first of the year or budget, but ask if we could do it now. We would have to compete it. But
we can ask them, and we can also have the discussion next week about the $2,500, just as part of the budget discussion on the 27th, so we can do both.
I mean, he's going to want to build some goodwill, given that the next development is coming down the road.
Whether a choice for the Grange or another space next to the senior center, I think it'd be better for them to have the space next to the senior center.
Well, it depends on
I go to the Grange, and it's a nice place, but it's a ways away. It's a little bit, you know, funky environment. It might be nicer, actually, at Vintage. I don't know if you can.
Well, the issue is the parking.
So there is space, but there are parking problems.
Yeah. No,
that's the problem right now.
I see.
There's also a possible fix there. There's a gravel area next to this abandoned building, and I was going to talk to you guys about it, see about Gina and Public Works, if we could just level it and put some gravel down and kind of create a temporary parking. It's an option. It's a relatively cheap option that could bring some relief to the parking issues up there, I think, but I would rely on...
I thought you were going to talk about how you do line dancing on the gravel and the lips.
I think we have a lot more work to do.
The thing we're short is their line dancing class. When they were down here, were they using one of our community rooms for that?
Yes.
Yeah.
And that was no longer able to do that?
That's correct.
And to put it on the record, we were asked by the senior center for any of their seniors that came with the programs to refer them back to the senior center, that they should not be working with us to take senior center programs and negotiate space directly with the city. And that's exactly what we have done.
You totally lost me on that. I'm just
this is what you're referring to.
No. Okay. The senior center has asked us when, for example, Barbara comes and says, I need line dancing space, for us to refer that back to the senior center for them to negotiate and handle on their end. Mm-hmm. And because this is multiple requests for we want that. We want to come back in the space in your building.
Okay. So let's mm-hmm. maybe take, not tonight, but 15, 30 minutes to talk about this. There may be some history here that I'm not in the loop on.
I mean, part of it, like, they just expanded into, like, the bigger room, but that's going to be the Chiefs putting in the emergency communications center. The other space that they have, it may or may not be where the Chamber of Commerce goes, and the other rooms we have HVAC and other problems.
Yeah.
So, but I'm also not sure what the flooring is like at those retail places in Vintage. And they have to be safe for people to do the line dancing, not.
Yeah, they're not in the. I examined a number of those spaces, and they are not inhabitable in their current condition. They would need to be finished, flooring, walls, and stuff like that. But they're not far off. It just would take some effort.
Well, if we could look at that before we talk about this again, that would be what other options are available. So, okay. Johnny?
No.
Mike?
Put this in your folders. Tomorrow night,
not tomorrow night, Thursday night, SCC has an exercise that Gina's going to help us with. Thank you, Gina, publicly. She's going to come and do one of the scribes. Andrew Ballard from Mill Creek is going to be the facilitator. Anybody would like to come if you haven't signed. Has anyone signed up? I'm not sure. If anybody else would like to come, still open to come. We're talking about legislative priorities for cities. And so I know it's short tonight, but take a look at this. This is a very rough draft. Hot off the press this morning, went to the Economic Alliance Advocacy Board discussion. We can talk about that more later. But this is stretched for countywide things. This is statewide for cities. Please, please, if you've got anything you want me to say, and therefore for Gina to describe under the flip charts on Thursday, let me know. Give me a call, send me an email, something or other, on something you think is important. I'll try to do the best I can. Other thing I had put in your folder was an article in the Herald. One of our future study session topics that never got onto our thing was ST3 station locations. Well, the county is working on that right now. There's a survey online. This arrow points to it, but also a little on the side. It's open until November 30th. It's a chance for people to go and check in and say what's important to them and say what would they like for the stations that will be in Snohomish County. This is the chance. It seems like it's a long ways away. But now is when the county's doing the planning for the sub-areas around those stations, and it's important. If you've got an opinion about whether it should be on the east side or west side of 164th, speak now or forever hold your peace, because the decision will be made, and it will be too late by the time people...
Yeah.
You know, it's just 10 years from now.
We have a state legislator who's proposing a density of 150 units per acre around the station and coming out, which will have a major impact on our city.
Yeah. So city council members, and if we could blast this thing out through our social media or whatever, so we're trying to get lots of people to be participating in this because it's important for people to pay attention.
Thanks, Ryan.
There's a couple things. Thanks to the staff and all the volunteers on the great Veterans Day ceremonies. The weather was great. A little nervous about the parade of people, I think because it was cold, trickled in late, but it ended up being great. Well attended and a great job on another year of festivities. The other thing I just want to raise is just a request. I know we've had some impassioned public comment on the farm. I hope that whoever's making the comments are taking the time to review what materials are online. And out of fairness, I hope everyone will wait and give the developer the opportunity to make their presentation to us of what the proposal is. It doesn't really, I've read the materials, I'm not sure if anyone else has. It's not really helpful to me to hear a lot of comments when I haven't even heard what the proposal is. So I just hope that everyone, this will be coming to us. I know we'll have a lot of spirited discussion come January or whenever it finally comes to us. So hope everyone can just kind of hold their fire for now.
Okay, city manager, the planning schedule, do you have anything else?
No, okay.
Okay, staff for park and recreation units, their audience communication, do they want to talk to the council? Okay. Because we're going to have an executive session for however many minutes are left.
Carmen Fisher, 14623 Main Street, B101. I'm unfortunately going to be out of town for the next meeting, but I'm very interested in the Mill Creek Police Department budget. I was really happy to see that the percentage increase that they have is even higher than that of the, you know, the general total increase. I'm for that because I was speaking to Detective Sergeant White at the Veterans Day parade, which was fantastic. And he was telling me about the incentives that other cities whose police departments are understaffed are offering to officers to move, and it scared me because I'm a huge, huge fan of every officer that we have here. So I just hope to see as much investment as possible in keeping them here and keeping them safe and just give them everything, whatever they want. Just give them that. The other thing is, I just want to note that it's only 2 months away from Martin Luther King Jr. Day, and then right after that, there's Black History Month in February. I don't know if we have any observations planned. If we don't, I'd like, you know, for you to consider adding some. Ideally, like even a proclamation or any programming would be Black-led. And two ways I've thought of to address that would be hiring a consultant or reaching out to the NAACP of Snohomish County, who might have some ideas or guidance. And, you know, I mean, I don't think I have to convince any of you that racism is bad. And I just think that it's so important as white privileged people, like every single one of us in the room, to, like, actively dismantle the legacy of white supremacy. So I hope you'll consider it. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks, Carmen.
Okay, with that, Council Member Todd has, is it, there's nobody else? Okay. Council Member Todd has requested an executive session for the discussion of the performance of an employee for 4230-110-1G. We have about 8 minutes left. So with that, no action is anticipated. So, yeah, let's get up there so we can get this done.
I know it's going to be a scary screen.